Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights of the round table, three dots where we're able. We'll do routines to border scenes, to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give them rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off so mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
On second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would
feel... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies, and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We're the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Didn't that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100-1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. The time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazazradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one but four separate chat rooms, as well as if you scroll down underneath there, there is a link to People for People Radio Network. Go over and join those wonderful folks. So I want to talk about some psychological warfare. It's kind of hard to understand, you know, what's going on in this world, or even know the truth if you don't even know that this type of deal's been, you know, essentially used on you. So to get this started, I'm going to go ahead and play this little piece right here.
Psychological warfare, say where, or the basic aspects of modern psychological operations, PSYOP, have been known by many other names or terms, including MISO, PSYOPs, political warfare, hearts and minds, and propaganda. The term is used to denote any action which is practiced mainly by psychological methods with the aim of evoking a planned psychological reaction in other people. Various techniques are used, and are aimed at influencing a target audience's value system, belief system, emotions, motives, reasoning, or behavior. It is used to induce confessions or reinforce attitudes and behaviors favorable to the originator's objectives, and are sometimes combined with black operations or false flag tactics. It is also used to destroy the morale of enemies through tactics that aim to depress troops' psychological states. Target audiences can be governments, organizations, groups, and individuals, and is not just limited to soldiers. Civilians of foreign territories can also be targeted by technology and media so as to cause an effect in the government of their country. In Propaganda, The Formation of Men's Attitudes, Jacques Ellul discusses psychological warfare as a common peace policy practice between nations as a form of indirect aggression in place of military aggression. This type of propaganda drains the public opinion of an opposing regime by stripping away its power on public opinion. This form of aggression is hard to defend against because no international court of justice is capable of protecting against psychological aggression, since it cannot be legally adjudicated. The only defense is using the same means of psychological warfare. It is the burden of every government to defend its state against propaganda aggression. Here the propagandist is dealing with a foreign adversary whose morale he seeks to destroy by psychological means so that the opponent begins to doubt the validity of his beliefs and actions.
So, you know, what is the big deal about this whole thing? You know, it has actual serious repercussions and physical, mentally, and emotional effects. So with that said, I'm going to play this portion right here.
Seven warning signs you're mentally and emotionally exhausted. Number seven. Focus inwards instead of outwards. Someone who is depressed or mentally and emotionally exhausted will tend to focus on things that reflect them on the inside rather than look at the bigger picture. Everything becomes about them, even when it shouldn't. People will also isolate themselves and detach themselves from the rest of the world. They may stop communicating with their friends and family members and draw inwards where they are alone with their thoughts. In reality, being around people and talking is one of the ways to treat depression or mental and emotional exhaustion. But to someone suffering from it, they don't see it that way. They see social interaction as another burden that will add to their stress. Number 6. Irritation. Is there a connection between irritation, depression, and mental exhaustion? There sure is. In fact, depression and mental exhaustion are intricately tied. When everything is going well in someone's life, they don't stress or worry about anything. But when someone is unable to cope with certain things, whether it is small or big, they begin to become irritated. When it becomes a pattern, it's basically the straw that breaks the camel's back. The stress becomes too much for the individual, and because it has now become part of his or her daily life, they stay irritated because they can't seem to break the pattern. One of the reasons why this occurs is because of awareness of certain events. One example of this is a car accident. Certain events or places can be triggers to a person's mind. When you remember a certain place or event that was stressful or traumatic, you associate that with how it made you feel. So, if you consistently have the same stress in your life, it'll cause you to become mentally and emotionally exhausted. If someone is easily irritated by something, it could be linked to a traumatic event or something which brought excessive stress or trauma to their lives in the past. Do you recognize any of these warning signs yet? Keep watching to find out some other warning signs of mental and emotional exhaustion. Number 5. Lack of motivation. Lack of motivation may be a sign that a person is suffering from mental exhaustion. One of the reasons people become unmotivated in life is because of exhaustion. Think about people who like to run marathons. If you are a sprinter or a runner who runs marathons, You're not going to feel like running once you complete it, and you'll be depleted. Mental and emotional motivation are much the same. If you're too tired to feel motivated, you become unmotivated. In many cases of mental and emotional exhaustion, especially depression, anhedonia is often present. Anhedonia is when people lose interest in activities they used to enjoy and have also decreased their ability to feel pressure. People who suffer from emotional exhaustion may no longer find pleasure in doing the things they once used to love to do. They may have trouble getting out of bed, going on their daily routine, and/or performing at work. They may also feel unmotivated to socialize with others and may isolate themselves from the people around them. Number 4. Sleeping disorders. Sleeping disorders can be a direct sign of depression and mental and emotional exhaustion. When someone first suspects that they might be depressed or mentally and emotionally exhausted, one of the first things they notice is their sleep has been affected. There could be two aspects of sleep that can be a warning sign: if someone sleeps too much, or if someone sleeps too little. The reason why people cannot fall asleep when they are suffering from depression or mental and emotional exhaustion is that their biological rhythm is disrupted. Depression can also be associated with seasonal affective disorder. This is when people become depressed when the clock shifts or the time changes and the days become shorter. Also, if someone is on antidepressants, adequate sleep is needed because the medication will not be effective if the body is not obtaining proper rest. Many people who suffer from depression either sleep too much or sleep too little. They may be in bed all day sleeping and lack the motivation to get up. On the other hand, their depression may affect their sleep and keep them up all hours of the night. Sleep disorders are very common signs of mental and emotional exhaustion and affect many people in the world who suffer from depression. Number 3. No patience. As explained earlier in this video, irritation, which can also include lack of patience, is a common sign of depression and mental and emotional exhaustion. Lack of patience and irritability are often common for younger people, where sadness is more prominent with someone who is much older. The reason why people often become short with their colleagues and family is because they are overwhelmed. They don't feel like talking because their mind is in a million different places and they cannot concentrate on just one thing. The small things become big things, and big things become larger. This can be overwhelming for someone suffering from mental and emotional exhaustion, resulting in stress and anxiety. Number 2. Disruption of appetite. The body has certain hormones and neurotransmitters, and when we become hungry, certain ones are produced by our body. But when the body has a hormone imbalance, like low levels of serotonin, it leads to impaired function of all the hormones and neurotransmitters involved in this process, which leads to a loss of appetite. Leptin and ghrelin both play essential roles in regulating a person's appetite. When you have high levels of leptin, your appetite is reduced. And when you have high levels of ghrelin, your appetite is increased. Many people who suffer from mental and emotional exhaustion begin to lose weight because they feel a decrease in appetite. On the other hand, some people may overeat to combat their feelings of anxiety. Number 1. Sadness. Sadness is more associated with the older generation. The reason why people become sad when they are depressed or mentally and emotionally exhausted is that they cannot handle the stress that is associated with it. When a person becomes mentally and emotionally exhausted, their mind races with feelings of stress and anxiety. This overwhelming feeling causes people to break down and often cry until they become too tired to release any more emotion. People will often have low serotonin levels if they are experiencing extreme sadness. Many people who are depressed are also very sad. They may experience a feeling of hopelessness that makes them feel out of control of what is going on in their life. Treating depression, mental and emotional exhaustion. If you are suffering from mental and emotional exhaustion, there are some things you can do to treat it, besides visiting a doctor, which is the first thing anyone should do at the first sign of depression. Exercise and meditation are good treatments for depression and mental and emotional exhaustion. But when someone is experiencing depression, lack of motivation could be present as well, so it's easier said than done. It is important to try and see past the lack of motivation and see that the physical health benefits of exercise and meditation will not only help with this condition, but can also help prevent other health issues from occurring. In addition to exercise and meditation, people should consider talk treatments, where they either discuss their issues through an intervention with friends and family, or they speak to a psychologist or therapist. A long, stressful day at work, followed by a full house of children running around and leaving a mess in their path, can really take a toll on someone's mental and emotional state. But is the emotional and mental exhaustion along with depression something we are born with, or is it strictly trauma-related? According to doctors, it's a combination of both. We are all born with serotonin, which is responsible for binding our brain receptors. It is possible for people to have genetic mutations where they might be born with genes that produce high levels of serotonin. Alternatively, they might also produce low levels of serotonin. People who are born with low serotonin levels may function properly in their daily lives, but all it takes is a few stressful or traumatic events that can cause them to become depressed or mentally and emotionally exhausted. Mental health is serious, and if you think that you're showing signs of depression, contact a doctor for help. What do you think are some other obvious and not so obvious signs of mental and emotional exhaustion? Let us know by commenting below. Enjoyed this video? Hit the like button and subscribe to our channel for more videos like this, and thanks for watching.
Okay, now I'm going to try to blend in a couple other things here.
My message is, you got things that are broken in your life? I'll tell you exactly why. It's because giant corporations, billionaires, have seized our government. And for decades now, they have been making that government work for a thinner and thinner slice at the top. And they do it mostly out of the headlines. Just a little tilt here, just a little shift there, just a little exception, until over time, they've gotten richer and richer and richer and richer, and everybody else is left eating dirt. But that is the message.
Blaming others for your problems is a complete waste of time. When you do that, you don't learn anything. You can't grow, and you can't mature. Thus, you can't make your life better. In my 3 decades as a professor and clinical psychologist, I've learned that there are 2 fundamental attitudes toward life and its sorrows. Those with the first attitude blame the world.
You got things that are broken in your life? I'll tell you exactly why. It's because giant corporations, billionaires, have seized our government.
Those with the second ask what they could do differently. Imagine a couple on the brink of divorce. They're hurt and angry. The unhappy, bitter husband recalls the terrible things his wife has done and the reasons he can no longer live with her. The harried and disillusioned wife, in turn, can describe all the ways her husband let her down. Each has a long list of necessary changes for the other person. Their prospects for reconciliation are grim. Why? Because other people aren't the problem. You're the problem. You can't change other people, but you can change yourself. But it's difficult. It takes courage to change, and it takes discipline. It's much easier and much more gratifying to your basest desires to blame someone else for your misery.
That is the message.
Consider the youthful activist making a statement against the corrupt capitalist system by smashing in the storefront of a local business. What has he done other than to bring harm to people who have nothing to do with his real problems? The guilt, doubt, and shame he will inevitably feel in consequence will have to be suppressed so his beliefs can remain unchanged. And that suppression will do nothing but foster his anger and alienation. In the play The Cocktail Party by American English poet T.S. Eliot, one of the characters is having a very hard time of it. She speaks of her profound unhappiness to her psychiatrist. She tells him that she hopes her suffering is all her own fault. Taken aback, the psychiatrist asks why. Because, she tells him, if it's her fault, she can do something about it. If it's in the nature of the world, however, she's doomed. She can't change everything else. But she could change herself. Now, there are people who seem to be consigned to a terrible fate, but most of us aren't. Most of us have a chance to make our lives better. But how? Start small. Ask yourself a few questions. Have you taken full advantage of the opportunities offered to you? Are you working to your fullest capacity at school or at work? Have you, in other words, set your own house in order? If the answer is no, try this. Stop doing what you know to be wrong. Stop today. Don't waste time asking how you know that what you're doing is wrong. Inopportune questioning can confuse without enlightening and deflect you from action. You can know something is right or wrong without knowing why. Start paying attention. Do you procrastinate, show up late, spend money you don't have, and drink more than you should? It's not a matter of accepting some externally imposed morality. It's a dialogue with your own conscience. What are you doing that's wrong from your own perspective? What could you put right, right now? Get to work on time. Stop interrupting people. Make peace with your siblings and your parents. Diligently utilize everything you already have at hand. If you do those things, your life will improve. You'll become more peaceful, productive, and desirable. After some days or weeks or months of attentive effort, your mind will clear. Your life will become less tragic, and you'll become more confident. You'll start seeing right from wrong more clearly. The path in front of you will shine more brightly. You'll stop getting in your own way. Instead of bringing trouble to yourself, your family, and your society, you'll be a positive and reliable force. Your life will still be difficult. You'll still suffer. That's the price of being alive. But maybe you'll become strong enough to accept that burden, and in that fashion, even come to act nobly and with purpose. The proper way to fix the world isn't to fix the world. There's no reason to assume that you're even up to such a task, but you can fix yourself. You'll do no one any harm by doing so. And in that manner, at least, you will make the world a better place. I'm Jordan Peterson, Professor of Psychology at the University of Toronto for Prager University.
Okay, so moving right along. This all makes sense in a bit.
In the contemporary world, it's taken as a given that capitalism, with its free market and profit motive, is based on selfishness and produces selfishness, while socialism is based on selflessness and produces selflessness. Well, the opposite is true. Whatever its intentions, socialism produces far more selfish individuals and a far more selfish society than a free market economy does. And once this widespread selfishness catches on, it is almost impossible to undo it. Here's an illustration. In 2010, the United States President Barack Obama addressed a large audience of college students. At one point in his speech, he announced that young people will now be able to remain on their parents' health insurance plan until age 26. I don't ever recall hearing a louder, more thunderous, or more sustained applause than I did then. Had the president announced that a cure for cancer had been discovered? It is highly doubtful that the applause would have been as loud or as long. But what were they so happy about? To be told that you can now remain dependent on your parents until age 26 should strike a young person as demeaning, not liberating. Throughout American history, and for that matter, all of Western history, the great goal of young people was to become a mature adult, beginning with being independent of mom and dad. Socialism and the welfare state destroy this aspiration. In various European countries, and now increasingly in the U.S., it is becoming common for young people to live with their parents well into their 30s and not infrequently beyond. And why not? In the welfare state, taking care of yourself is no longer a virtue. Why? Because the government will take care of you. Therefore, socialism enables, and as a result produces, people whose preoccupations become more and more self-centered. How many benefits will I receive from the government? Will the government pay for my education? Will the government pay for my health care? What is the youngest age at which I can retire? How much paid vacation time can I get? How many days can I call in sick and still get paid? How many weeks of paid paternity or maternity leave am I entitled to? The list gets longer with every election of a liberal or progressive or left-wing party. And then each entitlement becomes a right. But we're not done. There are even more destructive effects of socialism. Entitlements create citizens who lack a character trait that every human should have: gratitude. You cannot be happy if you are not grateful, and you cannot be a good person if you are not grateful. That's why we constantly tell our children, say thank you. But socialism undoes that. After all, why would a person be grateful for receiving an entitlement? Who's going to be grateful for getting what they're entitled to? So instead of thank you, the citizen of the welfare state is taught to say, what more am I entitled to? Yet the left insists that it's capitalism and the free market, not socialism, that produces selfish people. But the truth is that capitalism and the free market produce much less selfish people. Teaching people to work hard and take care of themselves and others, and that they should earn what they receive, produces less selfish, not more selfish people. Capitalism teaches people to work more. Socialism teaches people to demand more. Which attitude do you think will make a better society? I'm Dennis Prager. To subscribe to our YouTube channel, click here. To help keep our videos free, donate here.
Okay, so I got one last one, and I'm going to throw in a quick song for you, and then I'm going to make a call on Skype.
You may not realize it, but you are currently funding some dangerous people. They are indoctrinating young minds throughout the West with their resentment-ridden ideology. They have made it their life's mission to undermine Western civilization itself, which they regard as corrupt, oppressive, and patriarchal. If you're a taxpayer or paying for your kid's liberal arts degree, you're underwriting this gang of nihilists. You're supporting ideologues who claim that all truth is subjective, that all sex differences are socially constructed, and that Western imperialism is the sole source of all third world problems. They are the postmodernists, pushing progressive activism at a college near you. They produce the mobs that violently shut down campus speakers, the language police who enshrine into law use of fabricated gender pronouns, and the deans whose livelihoods depend on madly rooting out discrimination where little or none exists. Their thinking took hold in Western universities in the 60s and 70s, when the true believers of the radical left became the professors of today. And now we rack up education-related debt, not so that our children learn to think critically, write clearly, or speak properly, but so they can model their mentors' destructive agenda. It's now possible to complete an English degree and never encounter Shakespeare, one of those dead white males whose works underlie our society of oppression. To understand and oppose the postmodernists, the ideas by which they orient themselves must be clearly identified. First is their new unholy trinity of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Diversity is defined not by opinion, but by race, ethnicity, or sexual identity. Equity is no longer the laudable goal of equality of opportunity, but the insistence on equality of outcome. And inclusion is the use of identity-based quotas to attain this misconceived state of equity. All the classic rights of the West are to be considered secondary to these new values. Take, for example, freedom of speech, the very pillar of democracy. The postmodernists refuse to believe that people of goodwill can exchange ideas and reach consensus. Their world is instead a Hobbesian nightmare of identity groups warring for power. They don't see ideas that run contrary to their ideology as simply incorrect. They see them as integral to the oppressive system they wish to supplant, and consider it a moral obligation to stifle and constrain their expression. Second is rejection of the free market, of the very idea that free voluntary trading benefits everyone. They won't acknowledge that capitalism has lifted up hundreds of millions of people, so they can, for the first time in history, afford food, shelter, clothing, transportation, even entertainment and travel. Those classified as poor in the U.S. and increasingly everywhere else are able to meet their basic needs. Meanwhile, in once prosperous Venezuela, until recently the poster child of the campus radicals, the middle class lines up for toilet paper. Third and finally are the politics of identity. Postmodernists don't believe in individuals. You're an exemplar of your race, sex, or sexual preference. You're also either a victim or an oppressor. No wrong can be done by anyone in the former group, and no good by the latter. Such ideas of victimization do nothing but justify the use of power and engender intergroup conflict. All these concepts originated with Karl Marx, the 19th century German philosopher. Marx viewed the world as a gigantic class struggle, the bourgeoisie against the proletariat, the grasping rich against the desperate poor. But wherever his ideas were put into practice, in the Soviet Union, China, Vietnam, and Cambodia, to name just a few, whole economies failed and tens of millions were killed. We fought a decades-long Cold War to stop the spread of those murderous notions, but they're back in the new guise of identity politics. The corrupt ideas of the postmodern neo-Marxists should be consigned to the dustbin of history. Instead, we underwrite their continuance in the very institutions where the central ideas of the West should be transmitted across the generations. Unless we stop, postmodernism will do to America and the entire Western world what it's already done to its universities. I'm Jordan Peterson, professor of psychology at the University of Toronto, for Prager University.
In constant sorrow, trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and no pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble, I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps he'll die
am sleeping in my grave.
While he is sleeping in his grave,
maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no more. But there is one promise that is given. I meet you on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Okay, and we're back, and I hope you all enjoyed that tune there prior there, and so let's get on with this deal here. Psychological warfare isn't, it's something pretty wild, because it's not limited to governments or secret societies. It's actually, you see it on a regular basis. Sometimes it's just in relationships with, you know, two significant others or whatever, that, you know, they, one of them wants to keep control over the other one, and so uses all kinds of different mental tactics to either break a person down or get them to see their point of view or whatever. And when it comes to politics, we've seen psychological warfare used not just by the governments via propaganda and all the different things that they, you know, the monkey business that they pull, but we also see individuals who have somewhere or another along the line developed an ideology from either, you know, a professor in college, or maybe even through their journey through grade school all the way up to high school and such. By the time that person gets down to the deal where they subscribe to a certain belief system, they'll start to essentially self-censor their information that's coming in, to the extent where if you're on the leftist side, you might only listen to a certain type of radio shows or a certain type of TV or, you know, news broadcast that have you know, your view of what you think is going on, things that you agree with, that is what you will listen to. And so the infrastructure that is put in place out here in the digital cyber world, such as the internet, is that there are algorithms out there that will literally track your likes and the videos you watch, and it will send you just that specific information. It'll send you things that agree with you, and so that basically it helps to strengthen your belief system or your ideology, things that you subscribe to. It'll strengthen your resolve on that. And sometimes it gets into a dangerous point to where you won't even look at any other idea. You won't listen to anyone else with an opposing view. And you get to the point where you would rather get violent as opposed to try to have a peaceful, decent conversation with somebody and try to work your way through the problems. Folks, this isn't by accident. This has been going on, you know, through the dawn of time, you know, whether it be dictators or kings or, you know, leaders from the past or, you know, whatever, certain groups that they wanted to get certain things, so they had to be able to manipulate society to believe the way that they do. Something simple as tugging on your heartstrings, you know, for the most part, I think that most people are good-hearted people. They just try, you know, they just sometimes get led astray, if you understand what I'm trying to say. People will try to get you to do things you otherwise wouldn't have done under something like the guise of patriotism or, you know, nationalism, something, you know, if you don't you know, if you, like George Bush said, he said, you're either with us or you're against us. Now, as an American, of course I'm with my country. I love my country. I want my country to prosper. I want my country to be, you know, a good place to live. And even when people immigrate here, I want them to have an enjoyable experience. Even if they're just visiting, I would like them to, you know, come to my home and enjoy themselves. And when they leave, they want to tell everybody else they had a good time. They want to come back and visit again. And that's the kind of life I want. I want for everybody else. I want to live in love, and I want to share that with everybody out there. But there are groups and entities and even individuals for that matter who have a different type of agenda, which they think that, you know, maybe they know better what's good for you than what you know what's good for you. And so psychological warfare is a pretty dangerous kind of thing if you really seriously sit down and think about it. You're not giving somebody a chance to make decisions, informed decisions about you know, what's going on in the world and the best way to resolve problems. You're manipulating them and trying to steer them into a direction that is more agreeable to your ultimate agenda, what you want to have occur and such. And so when it comes down to things like welfare and all that, you get people who are to the extent where they now become feeling like they're entitled to, just because they're who they are or they're whatever they think the world revolves around them, that they don't look at the world the same way anymore. They're not doing, they're not going out there trying to see what they can do to better themselves or even help others and such like that. Not to saying that somebody who, you know, is on welfare or something like that isn't a good-hearted person. They may be really wonderful, loving soul. They could very well be, but the system is a lot different than what you would think. Because when you get a dependency on anything, you think you need it. And in some cases, you might even go as far as to thinking it's an actual right, you know. I honestly believe that, our Creator put us down here and gave us all these benefits, all this amazing resources and stuff like that. And it is our right to survive. But it's also our responsibility to try to take care of one another and not be out there trying to use psychological warfare on each other to get our, you know, things better for each of us as an individual. Socialism might sound good on the surface. Communism might sound good on the surface. Any of the isms might actually sound good on the surface, but when it all played out, it doesn't seem to fare so well. And so, you know, with that said, the knowledge that you acquire throughout your entire lifetime, you know, could have very well been steered in specific directions for somebody else's agenda. And you have to learn to discern whether or not this was a path that you chose to take freely or whether somebody was actually using psychological warfare on you, you know, getting you as a patriot all riled up. You got to go out and you got to save your country and stuff, and you go to war for the man and you do things that you otherwise you would not have done. Maybe your own personal spiritual beliefs is that, you know, thou shalt not kill. And so you get there, you got a gun in your hand, and you know, there's only one purpose for a gun. You know, you're going to use it or you're not going to use it. But either way, you know, once you fire that bullet, there's no taking it back. And that mental responsibility of what you just did will follow you throughout the rest of the days of your life. And there are incidences in the world where there are other people who make poor choices out of anger that eventually, you know, I've been, you know, experienced that myself. Years ago when I was in the Navy, a man decided he was angry, and I don't, for whatever reason, he decided to take it out on me. He hit me in the back of the head with a steel pipe, and it caused not only physical damage, but it caused mental damage down the long run that I actually had to live with, and I still live to this present day with. You know, I sometimes, more frequently than not, make two trips for one destination because I get all the way to where I'm going and realize that I had forgotten something. Now, in my days prior, my mental capacity, my memory was good. I was on top of my game. But that one choice, that one individual, which can never be taken back, which is unfortunate. And I'm not holding any grudge against this particular individual. Well, they were young. I was young. Things happen. And I'm basically learning how to deal with this and cope and compensate for whatever's gone wrong. But not everybody out there has that built into them to actually be able to reroute their brain or, you know, be able to, you know, cope and compensate. And so you got a lot of people out there that, you know, something as simple as the power of the spoken word can literally get them to do things that they otherwise would not have considered. They might be good people on the leftist side or the right side, whatever. They might be really good people. But from the anger and the frustration, the lack of information put out there in a truthful manner could guide these folks to want to combat each other. Constantly pitting you against me, or color against color, or religion against religion, belief system against belief system, or lack thereof. You can see it every day, folks, as if this dark side, this dark entity out there. I would even go as far as just say it's the devil. All right, Paul Harvey talked about it, but nonetheless, you know, whatever you want to call that darkness or that evil, you are being psychologically. I don't know what the term is that I need to use, but your psychological warfare. It goes so much farther beyond just the phrase itself. It's constantly trying to make you believe that whatever you believed prior is no good, or doubt yourself, or so many others, and it's devastating to a society. As an individual, you've got to be so strong in order to try to survive in a world where somebody or a whole lot of somebodies are constantly trying to convince you of something. You know, is there or isn't there a God? Who knows? Maybe we'll all find out one day. Or is there not a one world conspiracy to take over the world? You know, we'll find out. You know, but this journey, not only are we, you know, under attack as an individual, but we're under attack as a family unit. We see and hear things that people say and do to each other constantly. We see a really terrible decline in, you know, morality as far as how people treat each other. There was a day when it was respected and maybe even expected to hold a door open for a lady if you were a man, to say please and thank you if you was a child, you know. And we don't see that at nearly as much. And then there was terminology that at one time was considered to be, you know, profane or filthy or whatever, and now it's commonplace. But the more you get used to hearing things, you become desensitized to the power of those words that are actually coming out of your mouth. And so where did all that come from? I'd like to submit that, you know, there's been a lot of psychological warfare to steer communities to either come together or to tear each other apart. There are people in this world that, you know, I won't even throw no names out there, because there are people in this world that are really wealthy, and they spend a lot of their money trying to manipulate elections or trying to manipulate public opinion to steer their agenda to whichever they want. And they have the capability of literally destabilizing nations and pitting you against me and vice versa. So this is something that we really seriously need to contemplate on when it comes down to whether or not we're actually going to try to make the world a better place. But when it ultimately falls down to is the individual, you have to be an individual. You have to be strong for yourself in order to be strong for others. You need to realize that you are unique and you are special. no better or no worse than anybody else, but still, nonetheless, you are a one of a kind, each and every one of you. And this is one of the things that psychological warfare does not want you to know, that you are an individual and that you are important and that you make up that one piece of the puzzle that gives everybody the big picture. Now, we can battle our way through this, but we have to understand a few things, such as what I just described, and that if we come together, we can actually turn things around, regardless of how many people want to tell you that it's all hopeless and we're doomed and we'll never be able to get through this mess. This world didn't get this way overnight, and it's probably not going to get repaired overnight as well. But incrementally, one positive pebble at a time, shows like the Knights of the Round Table bring some brilliant and some loving hearts together, and we try to sort through all the information that we know, and we try to put it out there truthfully, respectfully, without any type of agenda outside of making our world better. That's my agenda. I want to see a better world, not just for me, but for you and for your children and future generations. But we're not going to do it under some one world banner. We're not going to do it under some one world ideology or governmental structure. We're going to do it when we realize that each and every one of us is a positive piece of a beautiful puzzle, that if we ever come together and we do what I believe our Creator put us here to do, to be good caretakers of each other, ourselves, and our nature, the wonderful wildlife and beautiful earth that we walk upon on a daily basis. So with that said, I got a nice lady on here that you might want to talk to. Hi, Barbara, how you doing?
Hi there, Shaziz. Hey, everybody out there in People for People Land and wherever you're listening from. Yeah, this is an interesting topic today. And, you know, the term psychological warfare, well, we can kind of like soften that by perception management, the term perception management, which is, yeah, there is actually study on perception management. And what really I realize as you're talking and listening to those pods and looking at some links that I've pulled up here, I guess I'd say there's this, faction of persons who have certain positions of authority. They've gained these positions of authority, however that happened. And, of course, you have to be indoctrinated to believe the authority, so that's part of it. And it's been going on for centuries, millennia probably, from the get-go, because you have certain people who want to have control. Let's say they have the money, you know, and they want to keep that money. They have the power. They want to keep that power. So how are they going to do that? So they don't want people waking up, pretty much, and they don't want people to have their own critical thinking or perceptions of things or, you know, seeking truth. You just have to sit there and absorb what they're telling you and believe it. So how are they going to get people to believe them, you know, continually over millennia, that they have all the answers and that they are the authorities? You know? But this is where we are. There's a lot of interesting things. There have the climate hysteria. What we're seeing now, that's psychological warfare, or basically the manipulations of perceptions of the people. There's even the moon landing was used as a psychological warfare during, you know, I have this link I put up in the chat about that, how they used the moon landing. Of course, this is on a veteran's link, which is very interesting. And various psychological techniques. You even have Hitler's mind control experiments. So you have these people in authoritarian positions, or warmongers, or political people, or whomever, even corporations through advertising that want to sell their product. You know, the thing is, it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that there would be people sitting in a room, a think tank, I guess they call them, trying to figure out how they can, control people's minds enough so that their product gets sold. Yep. So there's certain things that they know about people. The visuals, for instance, how they affect people. You know, how doctors put you at ease, you know, or hotels or restaurants want you to buy their product or go to their hotel or whatever. So it's like all facial expressions in these advertisings. I saw this. This was really amazing. You know how they sell pharmaceuticals, you know. So there was this advertisement where there was a really lovely kitchen, all bright and shiny, new everything, and there was this woman, I guess it was supposed to be the mother and a daughter, in this kitchen. And they were in the advertisement, they were hugging each other and jumping up and down and all thrilled and enjoying themselves because they had used this antidepressant. And the antidepressant basically brought their life back to normal, where they're happy now and they're in a beautiful home and a kitchen all bright and shiny with all new appliances, and they're happy jumping around. But meanwhile, so as you're sitting there looking at this, you think, wow, I want that. I want to be jumping around in that kitchen, that nice new kitchen with my mom, and having a wonderful time and joy and love and all that stuff, right? So, well, how did they get there? Well, they took this antidepressant, so I need that antidepressant. I'm going to go get that antidepressant because I'm being told this is what's going to happen. My life will be wonderful. Meanwhile, on the other side of it, nobody's reading the side effects of these antidepressants that basically are suicidal thoughts or damaging your liver or a heart attack or whatever it is, but that doesn't matter. It's what you saw, what they presented to you as a psychological manipulation, you know, to basically manage your perception of things. And so we have, across the board, political, psychological warfare, corporate psychological warfare, whatever it is, we are inundated with this. And today we see two factions here, the climate hysteria, the political hysteria, what they call the Trump syndrome? I don't know what that's called. Trump...
derangement. Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah, Trump derangement. We've come to this point where there's a president here where people are deranged, acting in a deranged manner. Well, how does that happen? Well, you just have to look at the... the arena of the media, the mainstream media. And I said this to someone 2 years ago. I said, never in my life have I ever seen the media, all the media, attacking a president on the level that I've never seen this. You have to look at that. Every mainstream media is doing this.
Well, you know, that's because they fear what he's saying. And that's one of the reasons why I keep talking about how come the individual is so important. I sat there one time and I was asking myself, what makes me so dangerous to the system that they would actually take time to mess with me? You know, what? I'm not rich, I'm not famous, I'm not even remotely powerful, but what would cause them to think that just one individual could actually make a difference in the world, that they have to shut this one individual down? But then, listening to that Bug's Life, he said, if you let one of them stand up, then they all might stand up.
That's right.
That's the key right there.
Yeah, if one wakes up, oops, they'll all wake up.
Yep, that's the key right there. That's how they know. They got to keep us fighting each other. The longer we're fighting each other and having our little disagreements and stuff, or, you know, foul-mouthing each other, then, hey, they got the control, and they'll keep that control because they already put laws into place for just such an emergency that we decide we're going to stand up against them, or, you know, we actually start fighting amongst each other, and it just gives them even more power and even more, you know, financial, what do you call that? It's like job security for them. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I also see that when people start to awake, or there's a semblance of some awakening, and people are starting to respond back in a way that questions, if you start to question authority, or the manipulators, the controllers, well, they have to ramp up on their side, basically, to keep you dumbed down. So they have to really put more, you know, pressure and create more insanity and push more of that media hype psychological warfare, or your basically your perception management. You know, how what you perceive. What, you know, people look at this stuff, they're constantly inundated. They spend their time looking at this stuff, and now even more so because it's really hyped up and it's really pretty insane, so people are locked into it. And people are spinning, literally spinning. And we see how people are on the attack of others because this is the hype, this is what's going on. They want us to be, as you said, attacking each other. They want us divided. Why? You have to question, if you're interested, why do they want people divided? You know, I mean, this is very important. And people are actually falling into line like sheeple. It's called, you know, the word sheeple is a very significant word. Like the church calls the people lambs, you know, the little sheep, right?
Yeah, their flock.
The flock. This is our flock. A flock of sheeple, people that are not thinkers or critical thinkers or have no sense of their specialness or significance, like you say.
Well,
you know,
and the crazy thing is, to back up all we're talking about, is that they have made words so powerful. They've even made objects powerful, such as, you know, the color of a hat. You know, a red hat's enough to trigger somebody. A word is enough to trigger somebody. And they've got these entire, you know, let's say flock of sheeples or whatever. And when one of them's triggered, it's a domino effect. They're all triggered. You see what I'm saying? And this is a powerful tool in psychological warfare. If you can get all these people to believe enough in one thing, if this person's wearing this color hat, they have to be a racist. You know?
That's true.
Might not even say Trump on it. It could just be a red hat.
Might
say,
or if they happen to be standing in the parameter of a rally, they just happen to be standing there, and they'll get pummeled because they're standing there in a rally that somebody's talking about. They're not even, maybe they're not even have a thought or an idea or a connection to that person, but they just happen to be standing there drinking their coffee,
yep.
You know, and then you have the assaults coming, or the perception that person must be following this political, you know, this political person, because they're there.
Yep.
So it's the perception. So the perception is rising that you are separate. It is us against them, but we're all really one. But that's what the perception is today. So everybody's been indoctrinated from way back. I'm thinking of I always go to my experience in Catholic Church, you know. Of course, as a child, I didn't know any difference. I just, that was it. It was accepted. You were indoctrinated into that church, believing what they tell you, because you're a child, and you're vulnerable. You're open to whatever they tell you, because they are the authorities, and you don't question. Even if you have a question, you dare not speak it. You know, if you have an opposing or opposite thought or idea, well, that's opposing them. You can't express that. You will be punished.
Well, psychological warfare actually blends perfectly in with terrorism, because these really radical groups that you know, are acting under some religious ideology, when they go to not only cut one person's head off because they believe differently, that has a ripple effect back through its own deal, that people aren't willing to say, hey, stand up and say, hey, that's wrong, you know, don't do that. That's not right.
Well, you're at the point now in our world where you don't dare do that because you will be vehemently attacked by the masses of sheeple who are, you know, because you don't dare say anything, no matter what's going on. An ism is present. When an ism is present, you will be attacked.
That's right. If you step out of line and go against the agenda, even if you're in the right, it don't matter. The facts, you know, there's somebody said that you tell a lie long enough, it becomes, you know, like a fact. And people start to believe it to be true. You could be a bold-faced lie, but it's been told by so many people of perceived authority, or even media, or even enough of the individuals had repeated it so long that when people hear that, you know, I heard this person was a rapist, you know. Well, that person may not have been a rapist. You just attacked an individual, you know, personally, and didn't even know the truth or the facts about it. And so when they're running around hollering Trump's a racist, and you're sitting there and you're looking at the big picture, and you start seeing, wait a second, he's got all these different ethnicities working for him as an employment, and he's always doing these kind things for other people, and so the facts don't match the deal, but it doesn't matter.
But you won't
matter.
See that. You see, that's the whole point. You won't see that side.
No, you won't.
There's a manipulation going on, because why? There's an agenda. If there's a manipulation going on behind that, is an agenda. And the agenda is basically to create false information and lies about a person who's in a position that you don't agree with, because you wanted your person to be elected as president. And now you're really angry. So this is all political.
Yep.
It's one political party against another. Now, it's really important that we know, of course, that both sides on the spectrum here, both parties, both people in across the aisle, the Dems and the Republicans, there's dirty people in every arena here. It's not just one.
Yeah, that's why I keep trying to tell people, when you talk about the left wing and the right wing, they're connected to the same
body. They're connected to the same body.
Yeah. So, you know, if one side could get corrupted, you know, a cat don't only get fleas on the left side, not the right. The fleas will spread, and there'll be it might be an awesome cat, but nonetheless, that cat has fleas. You know,
well, it's interesting to me, because I look at, you know, I look at people's posts on Facebook, and the ones who I know they're outright, of course, Dems, because they're posting anything they can find on Republicans who have done dirty stuff. This Republican was arrested for that. This Republican has done this and so on. And I post the opposite. I do a search. Okay, let's see what the Dems are doing. Oh, how many Dems were arrested for, you know, porno sites? How many Dems were arrested for, you know, for money laundering? So I post that. Because I feel we need to look at both sides.
That's
just
right.
That's the way we need to be. Because otherwise, we're missing a major part here of manipulation. We are being manipulated to point to only one group of people.
Yep.
It's the same across the board with color or religion or politics. People are indoctrinated and brainwashed and manipulated, mind-controlled, to point fingers at the other group and say, well, they're above it all. Their group is above it all. We're the good people. Yeah, but that was the same thing with America, with the United States. It's like I can remember as a young person thinking, because of the little bit that I was learning, was, well, America is the greatest country in the world. We're the good guys, and everybody other over there, they're the bad guys. They do horrible things. Well, come to find out, whoa, the history of our government, what even began in the history here, you know, of this Turtle Island, of the colonization, well, colonization across the board, no matter who's being colonized, is based on genocide. You just don't walk into another country and everybody shakes hands and say, okay, you're here, well, you can control us now. There's gonna be resistance.
Yep.
You know, you have to control those people. How do you control those people? Well, you kill off a few, or you drop some blankets with some smallpox in it, you know, on vulnerable people. Genocide. Colonization equals genocide. I mean, we're seeing that still happening in this day in different parts of the world. You have, you know, Great Britain, you have all these other countries, you have the United States, all these other countries taking over, just walking in with their military, you know, power, military, to take over another country. Well, do you think that the people comply and say, oh, okay, we'll bow down to you, you're here, and you're better than us, and so on? No, people fight. People stand up for their land. They stand up to protect their families. You know, and so therefore, what happens? You know, you have to commit genocide, some form of genocide, to take over that country that you have no right to be in. And then you make it yours, and you change all the laws to satisfy your people, your nation, and everybody becomes enslaved. So we have this genocide, colonization, genocide, and slavery.
Well, it's worse than that, even to the extent when once they actually, you know, invade or whatever, get into this place, now they have to psychologically break you down so that you don't, you know, try to rise back up. You know, okay, they're here to help us out. You know, it's not so bad or whatever, you know. Whatever they can do in order to try to make you not want to be that individual or speak out against the system. You know, even when you talk about suppression, freedom of speech, if you're not able to speak out against the government and you're not able to point your views out, that's not freedom. You know, you're basically, you're able to be manipulated easily if only the only information that comes to you is via, you know, a mainstream source or, you know, government or somebody perceived, you know, of authority or whatever, such as, you know, when you go to college or something like that, the college professors, they got a whole lot more power than people realize. Because that whole group of individuals, when they use the words that they use, they're powerful words that tug on the heartstrings, and then when you get the majority of that college classroom believing a certain way, anyone else out there with a dissenting view is ostracized. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, of course not. You know, the looking at here is, so what happens to people when you're less confident, when you feel hopeless and you're afraid, when you're terrified? Basically, somebody is creating this, manifesting this purposefully, so then you are open to their ideas and their authority to fix it for you. Yeah. And this is where we are today. I just want to read this little piece that I put up. So it's the propaganda that is in pursuit, in reference to foreign policy goals, for instance. It's how they work this. It's not to honestly inform us, the American people, about events around the world, but to manage their perceptions by ramping up fear in some cases and diffusing outrage in others, depending on the U.S. government's needs. I mean, this is how we've been taken to war, to put fear in people. We're going to protect you from the bad guys. And meanwhile, the manipulations and intrusions and infiltrations into other government systems has been going on by the United States government from the beginning.
Well, when it comes down to the moon landing that you mentioned earlier, you know, there's a conspiracy out there that it never happened. But nonetheless, when the president come out and said, we're going to do this thing, we had to win the space race. We had to win it at any cost.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it was psychologically damaging to the other side. Okay, wait a second. These folks are already on the moon. They're going to start building bases there or something like that. And then they'll have, you know, nuclear missiles or something up there. So we had to win it for perception of power. You see what I mean? If we didn't succeed...
Yeah, the psychological warfare in regards to the moon landing was basically presented on a symbolic plane, you know, plane, like this symbolism of the United States of America landing on the moon.
And it also, in some small way, actually brought other parts of the world together. Because we did this as the human race, is what they said. You see what I mean? Where, you know, Russia could have got there first, and maybe their message might have been a little bit different. We don't know. But either way, when the world sat around and watched to see the first steps of man onto the moon, it was supposedly sort of a uniting thing. You see what I mean? And
well, yes, it was to get the people. Well, it was also basically to give this sense of that we are above everyone else, better than everybody else, more powerful. We landed on the moon, so don't mess with us.
Yeah.
You know, just, but here's, would you believe, now listen to this, this is, we don't know these things, but when you do your research, you come across them like there was a Committee on Public Information in 1917 and 1919. This was known as CPI, or CREEL, the CREEL Committee, CREEL. This was an independent agency of the government of the United States that was created to influence public opinion to support U.S. participation in World War I.
Yeah, and they also used the term the war to end all wars as well.
Well, it didn't end any wars, did
it? No, it just dominoed.
It reminds me of, I was thinking about the 60s, the flower power, you know, there'd be flower power, love, the end, you know, they all wanted the Vietnam War, they were disgusted and fed up with the Vietnam War, and I was going to do some research on how did this flower power start, what was the reasoning and source, and how did that all come about, because you had all these young people standing up against the Vietnam War. We never should have been there in the first place, and that was another mind control manipulation. And then you had the end of that flower power, the end of the love, wave. What happened to it? I mean, it was deliberately taken down. I mean, some say, I think I read in this an article a while back. It's something to look at more about, because people were terrified of these hippies. I mean, they were disgusted with this free lifestyle. Yep. Love, oh my God.
And that and the fact that it's hard to get a whole bunch of peace-loving people to go to war for you, you know?
Well, so they had to stop that, and some said that they introduced drugs deliberately to this faction of young people to make them appear like a bunch of druggies, crazy, you know, the wacky doodle crazy druggies, the hippies. What are they talking about? You can't believe a thing they're saying, you know.
Well,
and then you had the Kent University. That may have been the last of it. That maybe that was the end of it. I don't know. You know, when those students on Kent here in the United States, the students, our own military came in, and they were ordered to shoot these children. You know, I mean, they didn't use rubber bullets. No, let's just shoot them. So on our own land here, you had these young people. A couple of them were killed, I guess, by our own military. That was shocking to me, and it sort of faded into the background.
That's just one event. That people don't talk about Ruby Ridge, and they don't talk about Waco anymore.
No, Ruby Ridge. Well, I was reading, I think Patty and I were looking at this Ruby Ridge thing, the Waco thing, the other day, because there was this guy, this detective. I found this link, I guess. It was very fascinating. So this detective was very involved in this, in the siege on Waco. Happened? There was a lot of controversy. I remember that. I was appalled and horrified at what was going on there. It just seemed so wrong. There was another way. There's always another way.
Well, the FBI was actually, or the ATF, one of the two, was actually out there at shooting ranges with the guy that was the leader of the deal, David Koresh or whatever, and could have taken him in at any given time without ever having it go as far as it did.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that there were children up inside that building, they should have never done the things that they did. But, you know, hey, looking back in retrospect,
again, I think it was a political thing again. It's like,
sure,
you know, politics get in the way, but this policeman, this detective on that whole, it stuck with him for how many years has it been, that whole thing?
Long time.
And it's been with him, and he recently wrote something about how it's been on his mind and how he felt things could have been done differently, but then he couldn't go as far as to say they were wrong. He had to stand with the decisions and determinations of the authorities that he was under.
Yeah.
He basically wound up blaming Koresh and the people, and it was their determination to stay there and die, and with all these children, and they started the fire, and so on and so forth. But it was really struck me as how this was such a horrifying situation in our country that went on.
You think what they'd never talk about? They never talk about the fact that they had no right to be there, because all of the guns that David Koresh had, that they said was the reason they supposedly went there, every one that he had was legal. And they went there because he supposedly had this arsenal of guns. They said that there were complaints, but the people in the town said that they were upstanding people, never bothered anybody, actually interacted with the town. And when they went there to get those guns, they went to his property, their property, and went on there to take guns that were legally bought.
Yeah, and they also, you know, they also used child abuse as their excuse to be able to go in there. But if you look at the whole entire story, who ended up killing those children? Seriously.
Right, and the people who, the woman who claimed child abuse had left the compound, and her husband had kept, I think she had like one child, didn't she? And the husband had kept the other child. And it wasn't substantiated. They couldn't prove it. They tried to say that David Koresh was doing those things. None of that was ever proven. None of it. So it's kind of when I read that hit piece, and that's what it was to me. Barb found that link, and this guy, he did his best to take it right to the line to say there are questions that haven't been answered, but he did not step over it and say, we were wrong, but she's right. He took it right there to the line to let you know that, hey, if I could say more, I would. That's the way I felt when I read that article, that yep, he wanted to get the truth out there, but he wasn't going to take that step across that line. Yeah.
Well, then we went to, from there, we even thought of Ruby Ridge, because that's part of that. That whole system, they come in on somebody's private property. I mean, this guy, I think he was supposed to show up in court. He was stopped for traffic, whatever, and they found guns in his trunk. Now, he had rightful, I think, to those guns. They were legal. And he didn't show up in court. So, therefore, the whole, you know, army, pretty much, went to his property. Right? They forced their way onto his property, and they shot his wife while she was holding their baby. Some sniper of their, you know, FBI or CIA, whomever, murdered his wife because this guy didn't show up for court because he was stopped and he, you know, had guns in his car. A prepper probably was, or, you know, somebody who was a little outside the box.
You know what the creepy thing about that whole deal is? It was their propaganda and their psychological warfare that leads people like the preppers to do what it is that they're doing. You know, all this, like I said, the best way to sell guns is to talk about gun control. Yeah, we're going to take your guns. And so everybody who's a law-abiding citizen and has the opportunity rushes out and buys a whole bunch of them. So they're making money hand over fist. Even if the extent, when they get to the point where they actually want to come around and confiscate said guns, they already got paid for them once. They'll get them back if they ever do a gun confiscation. But the propaganda that started about this politician or that politician wants to take your guns, or the United Nations, or all the different things that you hear in the conspiracy world, these, you got to ask, where did that information originate from that got these people to the point where they actually believe that doomsday was on its way and we've got to stock up on guns and everything else? Preppers didn't just do this for the fun of it. They did it because they saw society declining, and they seen that the way that the political system and the financial system were, that as something was going to give, and they didn't want to be caught unaware with their family. If the financial system breaks down and one next day your money's worthless, they didn't want, with the social upheaval, because look at all the doggone protesters. Look how people act at a protest. They get ridiculous. They burn down their own communities. So when it comes down to the prepper, all the information that he had, he or he, she had received, going through all the information, the same rabbit holes that you and I have gone down many times, they went down there, and they finally come to the point where, what, look, we got to get ready, because it looks to me like everything's going to heck in a handbasket, and I need to be able to take care of my family and myself. So the people that started this whole dang mess to begin with, even with Ruby Ridge and Waco incident, and there's the Kent State deal and so many other deals right there, the manipulation that came prior to that was the reason why those people did what they were doing, and the government's reaction was, don't step out of line or this will happen to you too. You see what I mean?
Well, there was this, I just popped this whole thing in about Ruby Ridge. It might be interesting just to revisit this. I remember it was just a horrible situation. But they basically engaged in an 11-day standoff. Supposedly Randy Weaver was a self-proclaimed white separatist. Well, what does that mean? They were in an isolated cabin in Idaho. Weaver's wife, Vicky, his 14-year-old son, Sammy, and U.S. Marshal William Dagan were killed during this siege. So you have a woman, Vicky, the 14-year-old son, Sammy. These people were killed during this siege. But this was all based on, like I told you, the fact that he didn't show up because he was, stopped because he had guns in his car. He didn't show up for the court, so the U.S. Marshal Service was tasked with arresting him.
At least two of these incidents, Waco and Ruby Ridge, if they really seriously wanted to get these people without hurting anybody, they could have quite literally waited them people out. David Koresh and all his people, they're on the compound. Where are they going to go? They're already
in. Well, they started pouring gas. They're
They threw flashbangs in a place where they...
Flashbangs, but they started pouring tons of the gas into the smoke. What do they call that? When you smoke people out.
Well, the tear gas kind of stuff?
Tear gas. They started...
Those flashbangs and the tear gas were illegal. They had already been banned. And the FBI lied and said they didn't use them until they were found in their evidence locker.
But you have all these children in there, and they're throwing this stuff in at these people. Here's what happened in 1992 at Ruby Ridge. The situation turned violent after Weaver's dog discovered a surveillance team of six heavily armed U.S. Marshals inside the Ruby Ridge property. One of them shot and killed the dog, which led to an exchange of fire with Sammy Weaver, who was shot in the back and killed, and that's the 14-year-old. And then Harris opened up fire, killing Deegan, one of the marshals. So there you are. These people rightfully have their guns to protect themselves against the tyranny of the government, and they're on the property there killing the dog and then the boy, and he's going to defend himself.
Yep.
Right?
That's the whole thing. And you can't, if you shoot an individual, that's one thing, but if you shoot the law, man, it's already a given. You're in the doghouse. That's no ifs, ands, or buts. That perceived authority, regardless of the fact that the Second Amendment was set there for the specific reason to be able to stand up against a government gone wrong, a tyrannical government, and then when that right is actually exercised, they use that bit that it was a lawman that got shot, and so that steers public opinion around, well, you can't go around shooting cops, and that's... The whole concept of the Second Amendment just went completely out the window. They were on their own property defending their own selves, and all those lawmen actually had to do, if they really wanted to, was to wait them out. Because you have to come out of there for supplies sooner or later. You know, unless they're doing a good job of living off the land. But if the case was to put them in jail for something, they're already imprisoned. They're stuck there on that land. They can't go anywhere. They don't have no freedom to travel.
Well, they're gonna right. And you have the FBI. You have snipers. You have federal marshals. You have all these people rolling in on their property. You have an FBI sniper about 200 yards from the cabin. And he basically was trying, he was a sniper, so he's trying to hit, Randy Weaver, the husband, the father there. And he fired a shot, but basically it hit Weaver's wife in the face while she held her infant daughter behind the front door.
Well, you tell me one man who could stand idly by while even the perceived authority did that to their wife. You know, I'm a peaceful man, but if the authority come down here and they did that to my wife, I honestly believe I'd fire back. Honestly.
Yeah, so Weaver and Harris finally surrendered. They were charged with a host of crimes, including murder, conspiracy, and assault. Yeah.
What were the perceived authorities charged with?
Nothing.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
But what's the conspiracy? I just wonder. Oh, well, you know, they're conspiracy. They're whatever's conspiracy wackadoodles. So, he was convicted of failing to appear. So an Idaho jury acquitted Harris of all charges, right? And then he was convicted of failing to appear for the original firearms charge. Meanwhile, his wife is dead. His son is dead.
What a mess.
I've got some stuff here. Cleveland police shot and killed 12-year-old Tamir Rice, who was seen playing on a playground with a pellet gun. Surveillance footage shows police shooting the boy 2 seconds after getting out of a moving patrol car.
I remember.
Okay, they decided that they were in the right for shooting the 12-year-old. In Detroit, a 7-year-old Alina Jones was killed after a Detroit SWAT team launched a flashbang grenade into her family's apartment, broke through the door, and opened fire, hitting the little girl who was asleep on the living room couch. The cops were in the wrong apartment. In Georgia, a SWAT team launched a flashbang grenade into the house in which Baby Boo Boo, his three sisters and his parents were staying. The grenade landed in the 2-year-old's crib, burning a hole in his chest and leaving the child with scarring that a lifetime of surgeries will not be able to easily undo.
Man.
Also in Georgia, a 10-year-old Dakota Corbett was shot by a police officer who aimed for an inquisitive dog, missed, and hit the young boy instead. In Ohio, police shot a 4-year-old Ava Ellis in the leg, shattering a bone after being dispatched to assist the girl's mother, who had cut her arm and was in need of a paramedic. Cops claimed that the family pet charged the officer who was approaching the house, causing him to fire his gun and accidentally hit the little girl. In California, 13-year-old Andy Lopez Cruz was shot 7 times in 10 seconds by a police officer who mistook the boy's toy gun for an assault rifle.
Jeez.
Christopher Rupi, 17, was shot and killed after opening the door to a police officer, the officer mistaking the remote control in Rupi's hand for a gun, shot him in the chest. And it goes on. 8-year-old in Texas, 4-year-old in Minnesota, 7-year-old in Arizona, 5-year-old in Oklahoma. On and on and on and on and on.
Okay.
I've got this link. I'll post it.
We just have this recently, just last week, this woman was in her own home, her apartment with her kids, and some neighbor saw her door open and called the police asking them to do a check. What is it called, Patty? It was to check on
a welfare check,
it's called. A welfare check. So he goes in and he sees the woman in the room, and so he shot her and killed her.
through the window while he was outside at 2 o'clock in the morning with a flashlight.
Yeah, exactly. And she was, of course, she was anxious and wondered what the heck was outside in my yard.
Yeah.
You know.
So any homeowner would be wanting to defend themselves, you know. But this is why I keep on saying that I'm so harsh on protesters. These protesters that go out there and, do destruction, burn things down, or knock things over, they keep on giving authority more power every single time they do this. They think they're accomplishing something by getting out there picketing and getting rioting in the street and fighting with people that, you know, are on the other side of the fence, you know, liberal versus conservative and such, and most of these are around colleges if you ever take a look at it seriously. But when you do that, you give the justification necessary for the system to send the militarized-looking police into these situations. And they're shooting pepper spray randomly into the crowds and rubber bullets and stuff like that just for the mere fact that you're there, you're a potential target. You know? And this isn't what our country's supposed to be about. And all these rights and freedom that people keep on trying to get the government to come in and quell somebody else's rights and freedom, or make it so that they can't say certain words. There's places in this world now where you can get arrested for not using the right terminology when talking about whether, you know, what gender a person is or whatever. And they got terms like hate speech and stuff like that. Folks, you're being used. You're being manipulated. The psychological warfare being played on the population is literally off the scale. And if you don't recognize that it's actually occurring, you're going to be one of the ones out there in the crowd. And then you're going to be upset at the same lawman that you wanted to sick on the other side when that same lawman comes over there and violates you and your rights. You think about that. You calling the neighbor on the police on your neighbor because his grass is too high? Someday it's going to come back on you. There's so many examples of that. But the thing about it is, for some reason, huh?
There's a new law right now that if you lived with someone a year ago, you can call up the cops and tell them, look, when I lived with that person a year ago, they were kind of unstable and they've got guns. And the police can, on that information, go into that person's house and arrest him, take his guns.
Yeah, never mind the fact that that person that told him that probably had a vendetta against the person because maybe they were acting like a jerk and got kicked out or whatever. And so now, you know, that's the whole thing. And it just boggles my mind that most of these folks out there protesting don't realize what they're actually doing. And I'm thinking that if they ever get what it is that they think they want, socialism, communism, or any of the isms for that matter, are they really going to be satisfied when it gets to the other side? You know, the people that really try to protect the Islamic faith and all that kind of stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to bash the Islamic faith, because every single faith out there might have a good side and it might have a radical side. Most generally, they do. But if Sharia law and the way that these folks are actually treating women and their stance on gays or whatever, if that ever came into play, would they be happy with that lifestyle? Because you can't just openly be gay and openly be, you know, a woman that wants to speak out against the new government coming in. People don't get that, you know. And when other people see things that, hey, this ain't jiving, and they speak out against it, now you're either a racist or you're hateful or homophobe or anti-Muslim or whatever, that kind of stuff like that. All of these terminologies and trigger words and even trigger colors and trigger objects, people are getting irate over something as simple as a rebel flag or even the American flag or whatever, some inanimate object, some color or some terminology is enough to get people to go outside of what they probably normally would have done and actually get violent. It's crazy. It's beyond
crazy. Well, you know what? If you want to know what they're really up to, there's this article. Let me see if I can pull it up here. Hold on a second. Let's see. Here it is. Do you know what they name the chemtrail clouds now that they spray up there in the air?
What?
They call them Homo mutatus.
Ah, really? Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? That they,
yeah.
So there's their intention.
I thought they were the good chemtrails now, only taking out the demons.
Yeah.
But they're actually telling you that these new clouds are going to mutate you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, about that pesticide, the gay frog thing. I did a talk on that a couple of years ago, because that's how long it's been was put out by this scientist, that this company who was creating this new pesticide needed it to have studies, scientific studies, so they could prove that it was okay and acceptable. And he became alarmed because his studies were showing that these male frogs kept wanting to mate with male frogs, and they were being mutated. Something was changing their genetic makeup. And he wrote his paper on it and told the company that something was not quite right, and he felt it was dangerous and they shouldn't go forward with, you know, producing this. Well, they didn't like that. So they basically wrote him back and said, you have to redo the study and make it a little more acceptable. I mean, they didn't say that exactly, but that's what they were intimating, and they kind of threatened him. And so the scientist did it again, and so came out with the same results. And he wrote up his paper against this pesticide, and of course, the company eventually, well, they tried to destroy this guy, and he kind of like, you know, really, I guess he had to like take measures to get out of that area and hide himself for a while, and then he came out and started to talk about this. Meanwhile, this company found another scientist that they probably paid off, who gave their new pesticide, you know, the okay. So that's been out on the market for at least 15 years now. And so now you see this very odd thing, this escalating of confusion of gender going on, and I was just putting that together thinking, well, that's kind of fascinating to me, but it's, the pesticide has been out. Plus many other pesticides. Who knows what the heck these pesticides are doing to people?
There's a historical precedence for something like that. If you look up UNUCH, which is EUNUCH, and you read about it, it's about basically when they wanted to take a man and basically remove...
castrate him.
Yeah, his manlyhood. Well, those were usually to be servants or slaves.
That's right.
And so if you could take away, you know, like by spraying crud in the air and actually make people docile, this is not the first time that somebody's ever tried to use some sort of chemistry in order to, you know, make it so that a man's testosterone levels would be really super low, or for, you know, to make them calm, so to speak.
Chemical castration.
Yeah. So I thought I'd bring that up because what you guys was talking about that frog, these chemicals that they put in the air, they could literally have side effects to where, you know, people aren't sure what gender they are anymore. And what purpose would you have for doing that? If you was doing it accidentally, that's one thing, but if you're actually doing it intentionally for an agenda, which, really, folks... How many times does the government do anything if they hadn't researched something and had a specific outcome that they wanted? Look what they did in Vietnam. They sprayed a chemical out there to defoliate and to kill off all the plants and try to make it so that these people wouldn't have a place to hide when the military came in, but they poured it on our own soldiers. And not only that, they were spraying cloud seeding the clouds with, I think it was silver iodide at the time, to get it to rain, because you can't move equipment and stuff around if the trails are all muddy. So it wasn't the first time they ever done some. And what you said, Agent Orange, yeah, that actually had a long-term effect to all the soldiers who were exposed to it.
Well, do you know that Agent, it's called Agent Orange, is still being used today? It's GMOs, basically it's a bioweapon being used today. The legacy of Agent Orange and Monsanto's attempt to defoliate the hiding places in the Viet Cong is still apparent in modern Vietnam. But how these chemicals are being used now in the aftermath of war should be even more chilling to us. And so this chemical was sprayed primarily from C-123 twin-engine aircraft carriers. This was called Operation Ranch Hand. I love the way they come up with these titles for things. Operation Ranch Hand. A total number of gallons of herbicide sprayed are in the millions of gallons. One of the primary chemicals, Agent Orange, was named so because the canisters they were transported in were painted with bright orange stripes. It is T4/D, but other chemicals were also contained within these. So you have, aside from hundreds of thousands of birth defects reported by the Vietnamese from the spraying of these chemicals, war veterans began to notice health problems that they attributed to the exposure of Agent Orange. It took nearly 20 years after the Vietnam War ended for Congress to inquire about the ramifications of using these chemicals in Vietnam. They only, 20 years for them to inquire. So it's likely that many vets did see symptoms from Agent Orange exposure until many years after the fact. Eventually, Congress asked the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Sciences, to perform an in-depth study on these chemicals, and they did find them highly toxic, but at what cost to veterans who showed adverse health symptoms earlier? So then the U.S. military, who commissioned Monsanto and Dow, among other chemical companies, to create Agent Orange, knew it was highly toxic.
Well, check this out.
Yeah.
Well, move forward into the Gulf War, where they used depleted uranium, and the soldiers had no clue, but they were coming home sick, and their families were getting sick when they came home. And they kept denying that it had any connection whatsoever. How many people died, family members died, before they couldn't write it off anymore, and then came out and admitted, okay, yeah, we used depleted uranium.
Well, check this out. There's an article written by George C. Wilson's March 9th of 1977. It was actually on the Washington Post deal. It said the Army disclosed yesterday that it secretly conducted 239 germ warfare tests in open air between 1949 and 1969. Some tests released live but supposedly harmless microscope bugs at Washington Greyhound bus terminal at National Airport as a part of the experiment. The idea, according to two-volume report the Army gave the Senate Health Subcommittee yesterday, was to learn how to wage biological warfare and defend against it. Think about that.
Well, wasn't there in Chicago, I think it was, in the 50s, they drove a car through the city and they affixed to the exhaust system biological chemicals and put them throughout, drove the car throughout the city, spraying the stuff out of the exhaust all
that.
Over the city.
I remember. Just to see what would happen or what.
Right.
They were after mosquitoes. I don't know what it was. But
no, this was even before that. They did that just to test.
Right.
Yeah.
To test what would happen. Using the public as guinea pigs, they're expensive. I just want to continue with it. This is so outrageous to me about this Agent Orange. So here's the future piece that's happening. So GM companies work with through AGRA, A-G-R-A, which is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, to feed the starving African children. Now, you may have noticed that many GM foods are sent to Africa and other poor nations as part of the aid packages. So, never mind that these very same multinational companies have scoured these countries for every natural resource they have and could solve simple diseases with a 2-cent vitamin, not by creating things like genetically modified golden rice to prevent malnourished children who go blind, or so they claim. Instead, these companies focus on switching out heirloom viable seeds with GM, genetically modified seeds. You know, so this to me is a warfare upon the people, upon the earth. AGRA, Monsanto, all these are meant, you know, taking the seeds and genetically modifying them, but giving poisons, you know, poisons to the people. You know, yeah. This is pretty, pretty sickening to me.
Well, it's crazy, but, you know.
It's not only psychological warfare, it's like the warfare on every aspect of the human being. It's spiritual, physical.
We can't live in denial that there are untrustworthy individuals in seats of power, and as well as, you know, there's a guy that talked about why he left Greenpeace, how Greenpeace used to be and what it is now, and some of his reasoning for it would blow your doors off, but they got powerful, and they stopped listening to science and only, you know, basically used propaganda and everything to get whatever they wanted done. And so even companies and corporations, they know how to advertise to you. They know all these profiles that have been made on individuals that go on the internet or even just go to the store for that matter. They know what your likes are. They know what your dislikes are. They know where your trigger buttons are. They know what to say to you in order to get you to, you know, do what they want you to do.
Well, we have to become alert and aware, because there is a chemical warfare obviously going on in our food products. You have companies like Heinz, Knorr, SlimFast, and Best Foods, just to name a few. They have ties to the Bilderberg Group, it says here, and I popped this article in. And they're pointing huge amounts of man-made chemicals in the food in our local grocery stores. Aspartame, as an example. Did you know about aspartame, by the way, when aspartame
came out? Oh,
yeah,
that is terrible. That is some terrible stuff.
But people scarf that stuff up because, yeah, don't take sugar. Sugar's going to make you sick.
It's in diet sodas, and it's in a lot of the kids' candy. You know, that stuff is a synthetic sweetener, and it actually builds up in your system, and it can give you heart attack-like symptoms. And so then a lot of people go to the hospital after drinking a lot of that doggone diet soda and don't realize what's happening.
Well, they had to change the name because there was a big flack and they got caught. So they said, okay, we're not going to make it anymore. And then they changed the name. They changed the name like twice.
Yeah.
But it's aspartame, but it's just been renamed. Yeah.
Brand new name to make it, you know, safe. It's okay now. You can take this, but... So you have to ask, so for instance, we've talked about fluoride, sodium fluoride. That makes us infertile, quick to age, and docile. Well, who would be interested in doing that? Why are these companies sitting down at a table, well, you know, we have a problem with this fluoride, but, you know, it creates infertility, and people are becoming docile, and they're quick to age, and they're getting sick and ill. What are we going to do about it? Okay. Nothing. We're just going to keep selling it because we need money. Just saying.
Well, that one definition that I read out about eunuch, that's why, so they could keep this person docile and be a servant and loyal and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't just stop there. You go into the ways that they propagandized, like even during World War II, they fly flyers over there and tell people basically, you know, how to surrender, or if you're in battle, just act sick. It was in every single conflict you can possibly imagine, but it was to break the spirit down of the other side over there. And so if they want to keep them, at least the males of the society, because normally males are the ones getting out there on the battlefield doing the fighting. Not to say that a female probably couldn't do the same, you know, job, or maybe even better, who knows. But the reality is most of the males are the ones that are out there that have to be, you know, aggressive. You got to get on the battlefield, you got to be aggressive. It's either kill or be killed. And if you're trying to keep a system, a society down, because you don't want them rising up, you don't want ex-military veterans rising up against the government, which they already have the training, they already have the skills, and with their, you know, testosterone levels, or, you know, their manlyhood or whatever, they are a formidable foe, if that makes any sense to you. And so you've got to do something to calm them all down, to propagandize them, to make the government and the authorities seem more powerful than these people. Nobody's going to stand with you. You're going to be standing alone. That's why a majority of the people who say that they would never go up against the government, because nobody else would. They wouldn't stand with us, you know. You see what I'm trying to say here? So if you're on your own, it's less likely you're going to stand up against people. Did I lose y'all?
No, just thinking.
Yep.
I'm looking
Barry's
at
Barry's here.
Hi, Barry.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Morning.
They're trying to take away our manlyhood with psychological warfare.
Well, it's not good to be a man anymore, man. That's not cool.
No, we're supposed to be shamed.
We all got
to be shamed. Well, it's not good to be a white man anymore.
That's why they say real men wear pink. I ain't wearing pink.
We are the most endangered species on the planet right now, simply because I was born with white skin. Yeah. I mean, was that my choice? My blood's the same color as anybody else's.
Well, never mind the fact that we probably got a mixture of all different types of heritages in our bloodstream, and just because we appear to be, does an albino count as a white man?
Well,
there's another thing that's going on. It's not just a war against whites. It's creating the division. It's the whites against them again. Them against the whites again. You know, it's the female against the male. It's the, you know, the gay against the white.
Right.
You know, and
the division, man. They use the weapon of political correctness. They had divided our society. Now, we've never seen our society so divided. And of course, it comes back to political correctness and pandering to special needs groups and everything else that's going on behind the scenes. To absolutely divide society. In Canada, you know, people are ready to go and fight each other over simple statements. If you say you're a Christian now in Canada, I get attacked for that. Well, that never happened in the past. You know, I was able to speak my truth, and now I'm getting attacked for it. I've seen that in the last 3 or 4 months. Well, they're ramping this up, and of course, it's not going to stop. It's only going to get worse. But it will divide our society. And of course, fluoride and all the chemicals they're putting into our body, it's all part of an equation. They want to make us so weak that we don't have the ability to fight back. They want to distort our brains so badly that we can't think straight. Where the zombified apocalypse now is a reality in society. I mean, you ask people their name and they're stuck for an answer. It's pretty sad where we are right now.
Well, it's gone so far as what is called by this Neil Burton, MD, in Psychology Today, he's calling this the Lucifer effect. What it is it's creating differences to justify atrocities. It's dehumanization.
Yes.
When you dehumanize people, it's easy to target them because they're different, whether they're race, religion, social class, sexual orientation, disability, whatever it is, it's to dehumanize these persons so that you can, you know, nobody gets upset about the atrocities or what's really going on.
Well, I'm a real mess because I got proven Cherokee heritage because my grandmother and my great-grandmother were full-blooded Cherokee. And I also have French-Canadian and maybe a couple other things in me as well. So I'm kind of like a mutt, but I still actually have to defend myself as not being a racist and hateful to myself because, you know, if I'm a white supremacist, which I'm not, but I still have to defend myself. If I decide I want to wear a red hat, you know what I'm going to go through for that. So you're a racist, really. Who am I racist against?
Right now, because of the divisions and between the whites and the blacks and all of this, and the nationalism and all of this stuff, now they're coming after the Native Americans because the Native Americans, you know, you have this one sect that is still on the hate wagon from way back when. Well, they've been cropping up and, I've been seeing a lot of stuff from people. The white people, the nationalists and people like this that are spouting out the hate against the Native Americans. I've seen some horrible, horrible, horrible posts against the Native Americans and stuff. And this is another thing, against indigenous peoples. And I keep telling them when they say, you know, you indigenous people, I say, you're indigenous. You're no less indigenous than we are. We're all indigenous. What is this all about? And they don't have an answer for you other than, we are the savages. And these terms are coming back in style now. So what we're looking at is a return to this, chaos what did they call it when they call it Barb, when they were, the Europeans were able to come over and take over a country.
Manifest destiny.
Manifest destiny.
Check this out.
They're pulling all of this up for the reasons of division.
Check this out. A savage, according to the first definition that pops up on on Google, is adjective, fierce, ferocious, or cruel, untamed, savage beast, uncivilized, barbarous savage tribes, enraged, furiously angry, as person, unpolished, rude, savage manners. Holy smokes, that describes 90% of the American people anymore. Think about it. Look at what these people do out there in the protests. They're bashing in windows. They're setting fire to stuff. They're beating up people because of the color of a hat and all this different because of their different political views. There's a whole lot of savages out there. What do you think?
Well, these interesting thing about the Manifest Destiny, because what it did was it basically was under the premise that they had the people had the right. It was a phrase coined in 1845. It was a philosophy that drove 19th century U.S. territorial expansion. Called that the United States was destined by God, okay, its advocates believed, to expand its dominion and spread democracy and capitalism across the entire North American continent. So you have this premise, this philosophy.
That they use that for justification?
They use for justification for genocide. You know, and the papal bulls, besides, the papal bulls gave the people who came to this place, Turtle Island, and other places where indigenous people lived, that if they were not Christians, then you could take their land or you could destroy these people who were not Christians. They were heathens then and devil worshippers. And that's what the indigenous people were called, because they were, of course, practicing their own, if you want to call it religion. We don't call it religion. We call it spirituality. But they lived close to the earth, and they had their ceremonies and beliefs in a greater spirit, in something, a great creator, you know. And they lived according to the creator's law of one, which basically is a code or a way of living in respect and honor and generosity and relationship to creation.
Well, that's...
And that That was way the people, so you have these other people coming over here who were carrying the Bible with them, and I have to say that because they were under this other, you know, this other controlling factor that basically God gave them the right to conquer and dominion over other people's lives and lands.
I lean more towards spirituality and natural law than I do anything else, you know. I still call myself a Christian because of the words that Jesus spoke and stuff. And you know, if I'd have been around during times when, you know, the so-called church was telling people you got to go out and burn these people because of their beliefs, or go out and kill these people because, you know, they don't believe the same way we do, I wouldn't have been part of that. I would not have been part of that. That's not my spirit, you know. And in modern day time, you just can't tell people that you're a Christian because of things that, you know, did or happened in the past or whatever. I wasn't no part of that. As far as I'm concerned, any true Christian would not have been part of that. You know, the Jesus didn't talk about going out killing people. He didn't talk about going out and chopping their heads off because they don't agree with what you agree. If anything, he talked about chopping your own dang hand off if you was going to do some evil with it or whatever, you know? But that's...
Well, speaking of chopping the hands off, I mean, this is what the Spanish did, the conquerors under the, you know, the manifest destiny or the okay of the papals of the church, you know, cut the Indians' hands off or their feet or chopped their heads off or killed babies or threw, you know, I mean, this was the... Under the manifest destiny, this is what they did because they said these people were heathens or devil worshippers because they were not Christian.
Anybody who calls themselves a Christian could do that to another human being. It's beyond me. As far as I'm concerned,
we've gone to war under the name of God. We've gone in the name of God and democracy, you know, against those people who basically are lost.
Well, that democracy thing right there. First off, the United States has never, ever, ever been a democracy, and I don't know why that term keeps coming up, because democracy is not a good thing. That's mob rule. And so we've never been a democracy. We've been a representative republic, but you even hear leaders constantly spewing out that propaganda. We got to protect our democracy. We got to protect our democracy. And a democracy would gather together and go over and do those terrible things to people. A representative republic is where, you know, the people actually have a choice, and they say, wait a second, maybe we ought to think about this and discuss it. Kind of like what Barbara was explaining a while back about the Klan mother system. That's the kind of, I would rather have all the women sit around and say, hey, look, this is, we got to weigh out all the options here before we go do anything crazy. Before we go to war with this, what can we do differently, or, you know, how can we proceed without you know, doing the wrong thing? That to me was responsibility. That's what a representative government is actually supposed to do. We're not supposed to go into unconstitutional wars, but constantly you're hearing via the media and even the average Joe talking about our democracy. We have no democracy. If you're in the United States and you think we have a democracy, your indoctrination and the propaganda work so well on you that you're part of the problem, flat out. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a representative republic. If you're in the United States of America, you live in a representative republic. And if you hear your leaders say that, you know they're not on the same side as you. You know they're not out to represent you. Mob rules means that, basically, when they get rid of the doggone electoral college, which isn't what everybody thinks it is, but when they get rid of it, then that means huge states that have larger populations like California, and we've seen how well California's done for themselves, they'll win every election because they outnumber everybody. And if you can get a whole lot of people, dead people to vote, well, that even helps you even better. So you'll never get the other side, the supposed checks and balances, you know, what, the right wing versus the left wing. If these two are up there arguing amongst each other, at least they buy us some time. You know, it's not a perfect system, but at least there's some checks and balances there. But if you get one side or the other, whether it be the Republican side or the Democrat side, you give one side or the other power. Power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's the way it goes. So anyway, well, Barbara, did you catch what I said about that Klan mother system?
I had to leave for a second.
Well, I was saying, when you was explaining how that system actually worked, that's the way that I feel that our system should be working as a representative republic.
Well, I mean, so about the Klan mother system, so basically pretty much most of the indigenous peoples in very ancient times were matrilineal societies. But also there was a Klan mother system that we call in this part of Turtle Island where the women, certain faction of women and elders, you want to call them, I guess. See, when you become a certain type of person, you are called an elder. Not just because you're old, but it's the elder. It could be a male or a female. Has certain wisdom and knowledge that they've gained, and a certain way they walk in life, a spiritual way, or we could say walking in a beauty way, in a sacred manner, they have wisdom and knowledge, and they're in touch basically with sources of this wisdom and knowledge. So it's not just that they're old. So you become basically an elder or a clan mother because you have certain wisdoms and intelligence how to hold things into harmony and balance with the people. And the women had these positions where they were involved in all circumstances of their tribe. In other words, basically they were looked upon as holding this wisdom and intelligence to be able to determine what was best for the people. So the clan mothers would, for instance, choose a chief, which was a male, but if that chief did not follow in the way of what would be good for all the people, they could oust that chief. But let's look at the system, the clan mother system, and the way the people lived here. The men and the women respected each other. For instance, there were women's ceremonies and men's ceremonies that were separate and they were respected. Nobody wanted to intrude, well, you have this over here and I want to be a part of it. So I want to have, in other words, I want that job. You're having this job, well, I can have this job too. But so in a ceremony, there were women's ceremonies that were respected by men and men's ceremonies that were respected by women. And then there were ceremonies where they were combined for men and women. But when the Europeans came here, so let's say this faction of people came from another part of the world, so the women didn't have a right to vote. You know, white women didn't have any vote. They couldn't get educated. They had no right to own property, and they couldn't get an education. They were virtual slaves. So you have a faction of people coming here onto this part of the world where women were respected and revered, and as I said, the system, you know, held that they were respected. And they had say-so in all, let's say, policies of their people. So when you had the Europeans come here, and they saw this, well, they had to get rid of that fast, didn't they? Because their wives couldn't vote. Their wives had no say in anything. That's a patriarchal, I call this, so it's the patriarchal dominator rulers, you see. This is what we've been under. And you go all over there in Europe or on the other side of the world over there in all different countries, you were already under the patriarchy dominator system. Matrilineal systems or clan mother systems or the unity of the male and the female in the tribal consciousness was already eliminated a long time ago prior to your coming here. And you didn't know any better. The women came here, they didn't have a vote. They couldn't own property. They couldn't get an education. They were virtual slaves.
That's a mess. Barry had something he wanted to say and I cut him off. Apologize for that, Barry.
Oh, I forgot what I was going to say now. That was like about 40 sentences ago.
No. Sorry.
No, we know we got an election. You guys know we have an election coming up here on Monday in Canada, and it will be the most pivotal election in our history. Our country's either going to go down the tubes or we're going to stand up, but we're seeing an amazing rise in the PPC party. But there was one of the biggest stories in political history came out yesterday, Canada, about direct interference by the Conservatives. They hired a company to smear the PPC. And the smear campaign worked very well because the party was labeled racist, misogynistic, bigots, and it was put out on mainstream media with nothing behind it. Now this all came out that the conservative parties were actually involved, hired this firm to smear another party during the course of a Canadian political.
Let me ask you a question, Barry.
This is monumental.
What form of government is Canada?
It's a government that doesn't serve the people.
I mean,
it's
like
a government.
But Barry, that sounds like what's been going on here in the United States.
Are you a democracy or
no governments serve people? We all know that. There isn't a government in the world, with the exception of a few right now that I could bring.
But I'm saying one political party hired whomever or whatever to set up false information and lies against the other political party.
Warren.
Never happened before.
This guy was a liberal strategist, went to work for this firm, was hired by the conservatives to bring up garbage on the PPC that is absolutely without any fact or truth behind it. And they achieved, they managed to get this out to the Canadian public. Of course, the mainstream media is bought and paid for by the government, so they put it out there and they blasted it, trying to smear the party. And this is unprecedented. I mean, this has been going on lots in our history, but this one came to light. And I think we're actually seeing a political false flag right now unfold. And what this is going to do is a lot of people that were going to vote conservative, which doesn't matter if you vote conservative or liberal, you're just going to get a globalist with a different faith. But all these people that were thinking about joining or voting conservative are looking at this now, and maybe their vote is going to go somewhere else. And boy, I'll tell you, I think there's something going on behind the scenes here. That this came out, 3 days before our election.
So what?
Well, if the media is putting it out, then that means it's been planned, pre-planned, and
exactly.
It's just another part of
Exactly.
I'm trying to find out what type of government you got there. It says the government of Canada, formerly referred to as Her Majesty's Government, is the federal administration of Canada, which is federal parliamentary system under constitutional monarchy. The federal constitutional monarchy was established through the Constitution Act of 1867. Is any of that wrong or right?
You're pretty correct in that statement. I'm not a historian. One of the things I lack is the ability to comprehend that kind of information. And I've listened to a lot of people talk about how our country is set up. Basically, when you become an elected official in Canada, you're swearing allegiance to the Queen. When we elect somebody in Canada, if they get a majority government, they can basically work as a dictator, and the Canadian people have no recourse to stop them. But in the United States, you do have those mechanisms in place to stop a rogue government. We don't have those mechanisms in Canada. Trudeau came in 4 years ago, and he absolutely ran shot on the country. None of the things he did in the last 4 years were in his election platform or in agreement with the Canadian people. But he's acting like a dictator. So every 4 years, people think in Canada they have freedom. They can go to the polls, and they get to elect their next dictator.
I
don't see it as any different.
Well, I'm hoping that, I hate to say this, but I really hope that, the United States is paying attention to what's going on in Canada, because we could, unless it is part of a mass agenda being played out, we could lose this country. And people say that's not possible.
Barry, listen, my dear, I have to inform you that this is happening here. It's the same story. It's identical. It's the mirror. All the nations, all the countries, all over, they're dealing with the same thing.
I know, Bart.
So this is a big plan. This is not just a plan for Canada.
I know, that's what I was saying. This is part of a mass agenda. Everything we see playing out in Canada right now is being played out.
It's a mass agenda.
Well, and that's what makes people like us so dangerous to the system. Because while they're playing their psychological warfare on us, and we're sitting here thinking and talking about common sense and working across international borders with each other, they can't have that and not keep the power. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Well, so what's looking like here is there's the ramping up attack on our democracy. I know we have none, but our Constitution. Okay, incrementally being chipped away at, and we can see that so clearly And that's the plan, but it's happening throughout the whole world. And there's a drift of, something that's being sort of like verging into an assassination here in our country. Assassination of a president, a duly elected president of the United States. And I don't care what your politics are, you will find out the truth eventually. How many years has it taken us to find out the truth of way back when of certain things? But the truth always appears at some point in our time. The point is, are we going to keep repeating? Are we going to keep repeating this crazy stuff? You know, this is like it's all coming at our right out now, out in the open, about the dirty politics, the hidden government, the deep state, the evil stuff that's been going on throughout pretty much all the world in governments, all right? So I'm just saying it's not just Canada that's going on, but here's the point, what I have realized over all these years, that no matter which president it was that was elected or seemingly elected by the people, that was not always the case. The other thing is, once you get in a position, a political position, no matter where it is, you know, what the system is, wherever it is, you are called into the back room and you are given the rundown on what you're going to do now, who you're going to be beholden to, okay? And that's a definite. That is what they make sure, that they control these people who have been supposedly voted in by the people. That's how it is all over. It's not just here in the U.S.,
One of the things that freaks me out just popped up in the chat room. I pasted it in the Skype chat there. Neutrons, protons, electrons said, free RFID chips. Woohoo. Look, I know that people really look at conspiracy theories and stuff like that as, wackos or whatever. But if you take out your driver's license, you take out your credit card or your debit card. Most of these cards nowadays, these identifications have a nifty little chip in there that you can run through a card reader. That card reader actually connects to a network, and so that network can literally track you wherever you go. Now, what part of freedom do you not understand if you don't have the freedom to your own privacy? With the things that maybe you want to buy, or the places that you go, if you can be tracked and advertised to, you every single one of you said you got on the internet or you talked to somebody, you know, with your cell phone or other devices around, and the next thing you know, you're seeing advertisements about whatever it was that you were talking about. That's kind of creepy. You get into George Orwell's 1984 or that New Brave New World by, who was that, Barbara?
Aldous Huxley.
Yeah, you look at those things right there, listen to everything we've been talking about here today about psychological warfare. That's basically trying to funnel everyone down into where nothing you do is your own life or your own secret anymore. You're going to constantly be in track, and you're going to become a number. It's almost like putting a doggone tag on a brand on a cow or something like that. That's your cow. You see what I'm saying? And here's one that I'd like somebody to try to verify. If you look at the old style Social Security card, there used to be, it used to say, not for identification purposes on there. And if you go look at the birth certificates, there is supposedly a red number on there that you can put into the stock market, stock exchange, and it will come up with different companies that own stock in that particular number. Which is really creepy, because whenever I did that, when I looked at my birth certificate the first time I ever heard this, a company called Raytheon came up. And if you look into Raytheon, you might be surprised at what they're involved in. And so, is that doggone birth certificate literally like the title to your car, or the deed to your house, or even the Social Security number for that matter? Is each one of us actually being cataloged as cattle, and there's other people benefiting off of what we do or don't do in our life? We're going to make so much money throughout our entire life, and they know this. And most of the stock market these days is on speculation. You can buy stock if it goes up, you actually win. If it loses or whatever, or you know, even in crops, how good the crop's going to be. And so they make money off of that. So that same concept could actually apply to you as an individual, how successful you're going to be in life, how much money you're going to make throughout your entire lifetime, how many taxes you're going to pay, and so on down the line. They could actually buy stock in you as an individual without your knowledge of even having done so. Even far as that goes, might even have life insurance policies on you.
I think they do. I want to say, you know, if we talk about the Brave New World, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, and I just want to give you a synopsis here of what that is in case you don't know. This was written in 1931 and published in 1932. It's set in a futuristic world state of genetically modified citizens and an intelligence-based social hierarchy. Basically, it's about a huge scientific developments in reproductive technology, sleep, learning, psychological manipulation, and classical conditioning that are combined to make a utopian society.
Yeah, it ain't That's so utopian for the people.
No.
And everybody has drugs to stay in bliss.
That's right.
Man.
You ought to see that movie. The movie came out in 1990. You ought to just Google it and watch that movie. It will chill you. There's a lot in that movie that I'm not telling you, but there's a lot in that movie that will chill you, but also that you will identify is actually happening today.
Yeah, it's got parallels, just like that series Jericho. I urge anybody who has not seen Jericho to go watch it. And then match that up to news reports that were going on recently during elections, where how they were trying to say North Korea was shooting off all these nukes and they were going to nuke the U.S. And guess who in the movie? This was all prior to these news reports. Guess who in the movie was the one that was blamed for nuking the United States?
China.
Korea.
It was North Korea.
Yeah, North Korea did it.
That's right. I'm thinking of another movie because it just came out, some other information to bring China or Russia or Korea or somebody to blame for the nuclear attack that was done by somebody on the inside here in the U.S.
Yep, propaganda via movies, man. It happens.
So the other thing about that struck me about a parallel here about what's happening today in Brave New World is this basically rampant free sex with anything, anybody doing anything you want, whatever it is, it's all acceptable. As a matter of fact, it's pushed as important to do that because that's a utopian society. No rules, no regulations, no sin, no responsibilities, no, you know, nothing, no morals, everything's down the tubes.
Well, there's a lot of good comments in the chat room. I can't keep up with all of them. Yep. So if you guys see a good one, throw it out there, because these folks are really throwing some interesting stuff going on. But look, this is the whole, what it all boils down to.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll say one here. Angeline said, if people realize they are in the world in name only, things will change instantly. You are in the kingdom of God. Your name is in the world. I don't know what that means, FFS.
Yeah, you do. For F's sake.
Oh, yes.
I was wondering if you were going to say it.
I'm just an innocent girl here.
Yeah. Yeah, all this boils down to is if you don't know psychological warfare is being used on you, and actually, I hate to say it, but sometimes by you, as an individual, if you fell into the propaganda and you're out there and you're telling people and you're fear-mongering people, you're using psychological warfare to further an agenda. It might not actually be your agenda. It's one that you think is going on. But this is how it works. That's how they propagandize. That's how they get soldiers not to fight on the other side, by telling people stuff, you know. You know, if you go back and look through the history, I think it was World War I, the first time the study was actually done, that they had a very, very large number in World War I and World War II of individuals who had a certain amount of ammunition when they started and had the same amount of ammunition when they left. They were on the battlefield, never fired a shot, And so they actually had to figure out a way to get their soldiers to start shooting at people. But consciously, when you're looking across the battlefield and you see the shape of a person, you don't really want to shoot that person because your spiritual beliefs or your moral beliefs says that it's wrong. So how they started training the soldiers was no longer on a little bullseye target. They would put a black silhouette of a person out there. And the police departments these days, they do this exact same thing. They have a black silhouette so that when you get used to shooting at a bad guy, you're not gonna equate that as a person. You're gonna equate it as a target.
It is. Call it what it is. It's dehumanizing.
Yeah. It desensitizes be dehumanized.
Yep. That's the process of dehumanizing us so that we can, you know, not be alarmed or upset about atrocities done upon others.
You're more likely to shoot and accurately and quickly. And here's the thing that scares me the most as a former police officer, is that what they would tell you is that you're supposed to unload your magazine at center mass. Do you understand what that means? Unload it.
It doesn't sound good.
Well, let's say you got a really big guy. And the police officer, he might shoot that big guy one time, and the big guy still has enough energy to get a hold of that police officer and his gun. So they train you to shoot an unloaded magazine.
Oh, is that why they shoot a person 20 times in the back?
Yeah, so that, well, they're not supposed to be shooting people in the back, but nonetheless.
They are.
You'd have to have special circumstances, like somebody else's life was in imminent danger, and you had no other alternative but to do so. But anyway, the purpose for shooting and unloading your magazine at center mass is to get as much blood flowing away from the brain as possible so that you drop that person and they're no longer a threat. That's it. And since you're trying to shoot at a black silhouette, you're not going to think as that person as a person in that instant.
No, you're not. Well, so they're dehumanizing us, everybody pretty much, so that atrocities can be put upon us, and nobody has an emotion, nobody has a connection. Everybody's disconnected.
Yep.
Well, it's the other guy. It's not you. It's the other guy, so that's okay, because it's just the other guy.
Well, it's like that not in my backyard thing, right?
Yep.
Right,
and
right.
The first-person shooter games that they have out these days that basically desensitize the youth of today, that, you know, shooting people ain't that big of a deal. And how I know that this is actually a problem, you go out there and you look hard enough, you'll find videos out there where you have soldiers out there on the battlefield shooting people down and laughing about it. How do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
It's not funny what you're doing.
Dehumanized, desensitized.
It's serious what you're doing. The moment that bullet comes out, there's absolutely no way to pull it back.
And you know, in the tradition of our people, when a warrior came back from war, and there was the ceremony, that they would immediately take them into the ceremony, which is the Inipi, the purification lodge, a prayer lodge, and it would help that soldier, that warrior, to to pray. Guide that warrior. The elders would guide that warrior to pray to heal him of this. What happened? What he took part in killing another human being, you know, to cleanse his spirit, to heal him, so he could also ask for forgiveness for what he did and
to purify him
from these things. Not only what he did, his realization of that, but energetically, what would remain if you don't get that help.
Well, not like that I'm into war, but they should do that for all soldiers nowadays, because when that rush wears off and you get back down to being you again, if that's ever even possible, and the reality of what you had to do sets in, it devastates people.
Yeah, when you come home, like the Vietnam vets and various other peoples, I mean, even my father from World War II, I don't think he killed anyone, but he saw a lot of death. He was involved in these levels of atrocities in some way. I mean, he suffered from that. But of course, there wasn't any such thing then as PTSD. I mean, they've called it various other things, and But the soldiers need that help. They need help to work through this energy that will stay with them, stay in their heart spirit, you know,
yep.
affect them emotionally and physically and spiritually. But that's not done, you know. And these people get pills, they get drugs, you know. Because they have PTSD, right?
Yeah, I know people today, Vietnam vets, who will not talk about their experiences. I mean, if you try to press them on it, you can see that it's not something that they can even talk about. It affects them even so many years, decades after this, they can't face what they had to do. Yeah.
Yeah, so emotionally and physically and mostly spiritually, these people are really suffering. A pill isn't going to solve that problem.
What'd you say, Barry?
I met a guy here last year that was fighting for Canada over in Afghanistan. And the guy was completely messed up. I mean, you could see what was going on inside of him. He was actually dangerous. He would flip out. People that knew him said that, you know, his brain is just completely gone. And what he had to do over there, when he started talking about it one night around a campfire, he just broke down into tears. So, you know, how can a human being not be affected by killing another human being or seeing some of these atrocities? I can't imagine what that would do to me. I haven't been exposed to that, and I thank God for that. But I just can't even imagine what it would be like to deal with this in the aftermath, realizing what you did for a really unjust cause.
Well, the war machine.
Yeah, because there is no...
All wars are sponsored. All wars are sponsored by banks on both sides. It's the poor people of one country going to fight the poor people of another country.
Yep,
you know,
nice.
And you don't know the people that you're killing. You're just going over there shooting strangers for reasons that are not your own. It's not like as if you were home defending your family and you could identify that's what you were doing. There was a real threat to your family and you protected your family. They don't have that.
Right. And if that was the situation, Patty, you would have no problem dealing with the aftermath because you did what you needed to do.
You could justify it, yes.
You could justify it and you'd be able to put it aside in your mind and it would be gone. I mean, you did what you had to do and nobody would ever condemn you for that. But going over to another country to kill somebody you don't know because of a Gulf of Tonkin incident would never happen. 64,000 Americans lost their lives because of an incident they proved now beyond a shadow of a doubt never happened. But Johnson was into Vietnam the next day, and the Vietnam War happened. And the military-industrial complex, the bankers on both sides of that war made billions.
Lots of money on every war.
A lot of American moms and dads were in tears.
Not just the Vietnam War. War is a moneymaker and also blood sacrifice. Let's tell it like it is. And I'm also going to mention your friend there that you knew said he was fighting for Canada. No, he was fighting for the Queen. That's who he was fighting for. But I don't know how that works. But this is what we're doing. So you know, you're
fighting for the bankers.
Fighting for the bankers, exactly. For the man, for the agenda, for the big ones, the elite.
I was just using the Gulf of Tonkin as an example, Barbara. I mean, they've used.
No, I know, but I'm just saying.
Like first times.
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. So here. You have these young men, boys, and women going into training, and they're desensitized, and they're told that these are non-humans. They're gooks or Japs or whatever they're called, anything but a human being, and trained and brainwashed to be desensitized to what they're doing. But you can't cover up what you're doing. You can't ignore what you're doing. This impacts people. You can act like you don't care. You can do that. You can murder somebody, violate somebody, another human being, another mother's son or child or whatever in another country that we don't even belong in, really. And so what happens to that person? So again, it's like the body, mind, and the spirit mostly is affected. And it's a very, very deep stain on that spirit.
Well, there's a war going on out here on the people in just about every nation. We're seeing a lot of it over here in the United States. For some reason, you know, we're kind of like the center of attention for the moment. But the people out there are warring against each other. And you have to ask, why are all these people up in arms against each other? Why aren't they trying to figure out who's actually the one started the mess to begin with and going it from there? Look, folks, I've said this I don't know how many times, and it's the truth. It's the truth all the way to its core. I have seen things that no man or woman should ever have to lay eyes upon. I don't wish that for your children. I don't wish that for my children. And as I watch all these events unfold before my very eyes, and we get on here and we talk about these things, it's really disheartening to know that there are solutions available for every single problem you can possibly imagine, but they're being ignored, they're being shuffled aside, and you're being steered away from them. You as an individual are told how worthless you are. You're even told you got to look a certain way. You got to be thin. You got to wear a certain brand of clothes. You got to agree with other people's ways of life and all this kind of stuff. You're not allowed or encouraged to be yourself or who you were actually meant to be. Your words are powerful. Your actions are powerful. You know, and if you only realize that one little portion of you, my God didn't make any trash, only treasure. And that means each and every one of you are a unique piece of the puzzle that when you put all these pieces together, you make the big picture. If we're ever to see a time when we can find out how far humanity could actually go, we got to stop supporting the beast that is literally eating us alive. It is shredding us apart. It's constantly keeping us pitted. It's getting us triggered for a color of a hat to a shape of a flag or some statue out there, none of which is in any significance. You know, those statues that you despise, they might be something that this might have been a terrible person and you feel like he's being glorified because there's a statue of him, but that's a piece of history that if you don't look back on, you're doomed to repeat it. Somebody else will step in that statue's place and repeat those same exact atrocities. So we can't just shovel our past under the dirt, under the rug, like, you know, under dirt under the rug, so to speak, and just forget it never happened. We got to know these things occurred. We got to talk about these things. We got to figure out ways to move forward together instead of apart. The only reason why anyone would want to keep you separated is the same reason why that doggone grasshopper and that Bug's Life kept telling those grasshoppers that you let one of them stand up and then they all might stand up, and when that happens, our way of life will change. He said this is not about food. This is about keeping them ants under control. And that is why they do to you what they've been doing to you. That is why the psychological warfare is working so well, because it actually has you, the individual, using it against your neighbor. You think about that for a second. Think about that hard, because what's the future, what we're doing right now, I say we're the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, brothers, and so on, of our children and our children's future. So what we do today is going to affect the world that we live in, that they live in tomorrow. And that's true. Whether it be environmental damage that we're doing to this beautiful earth, or whether it be the mental damage that we're doing to each other. We got to come to some common ground. And that's what I hope that this Knights of the Round Table show actually represents.
Well, I think that I'm always happy to be here, of course, every Sunday to be with you guys and share a lot of this stuff. Yeah, we do get into some wacky doodle stuff, but I always feel that it's important that we know what's going on and how we are being manipulated and have been being manipulated, our parents, grandparents, and so on. But, you know, like I always say, you know, my faith is very strong, and I know something else is going on. I know something far greater is going on. And that's, that's knowing that I have a connection to something far greater. It also, I know the miracles happen. You know, people get really down, like we talked about earlier. Well, psychological warfare is to basically affect your ability to have critical thinking and also to be aware and alert to the psychological warfare. And so I guess I'd say, like, step away from the mainstream media, step away from the political arena, because, you know, frankly, I see these political people only spewing hate and attacks. They're not really saying, this is what I'm going to do for the water. This is what I'm going to do for the children. You know, these are my policies that will help all people so there's no starving children, or we have free energy. None of them has stood up. They're all out there spewing their hatred and it's politics, right? So I just feel that these are things that we have to be alert to, that manipulation. How are you being manipulated? You know, when you get a reaction, when you react in frustration, anger, or overreact, you might want to take a look at that as to what or who is manipulating you to lose that. I call it losing your power. You give over your power when you overreact, and you become a screaming, spitting, crazy person. You know, so I'm just saying, we as a people have more power than we could ever imagine if we stood together in unity, you know. Okay, yeah, you just, it's not cool enough, I guess.
Well,
so I'm just
Barbara.
Saying, it's like, we do, and we have more power than we could ever imagine as a people, and they know, this is why they use psychological warfare and manipulation upon us. They know how we think. They know what will upset us. They know what will get us angry. They know what will get us out on the streets and hating each other. And this is what we have to stop doing this, I guess, I'm saying. Yeah.
I agree. This show actually moves me spiritually and emotionally towards a good thing, you know, because it's good to hear that there are other people out there that really care enough to put their hearts and selves on the line to come out there and talk about things that we talk about, because it's not easy. And boy, I tell you what, if you got any kind of heart at all, it is not easy. It's taxing. And so those same things that applied, what you just said and what we were talking about depression and all the things that come along with that, you know, that's part of that psychological warfare. And it's a real deal. It's not a game. You talk about military guys coming back and having PTSD. I think there's a lot of people in this world, in all different nations, that literally have the same exact thing just from what they've had to cope with in society. So with that said, which one you two want to go next there?
Well, go ahead, sis. I already said something. I might say more, but go ahead.
Well, I think that the main thing that I think everybody knows, everybody's got a at least the people on in the chat and listening, is that we're all being played, each and every one of us, that they've always played us. They know us better than we know ourselves, because they've engineered us for a long, long time. However, it just takes one thought to free you from all of that, and that is to know that you have the ability to make your own choices, to choose your own enemies. And if you feel you need to choose an enemy, then you should check that out, because if we have to choose an enemy, then we've already lost who we are. We don't have to have enemies. It's not needed. There is no reason for us to hate. There is no reason for us to find fault with each other. We can look at the people in this chat right here, and we can see many ideas, many ideologies, many ways of looking at life, and they're all valid for each and every individual, and that's what it's all about. And we know this. We know that each one of us has the right to think, believe, act, and become who we choose to be. It's in our listening to the intolerance that our government feeds us, that our media feeds us, that our system, this system that is created, that is not broken, it's working perfectly. The system has never been broken. We're the ones who were broken. And if we keep on investing ourselves into these systems, then we will never gain any footing. We will never become who we're truly supposed to be. There's no reason to hate. There's more reason to join together than there ever was, ever, ever, ever. If we can just put aside these biases, these things that we look at each other and we say, oh, you're wrong. You know, if we could just stop that. If we could just come to a point and say, look, we know what's wrong. We know it has to be fixed. And we have the ability to do this. We're the ones that built this mess for the control. We can undo this mess by building a world in which we all benefit by our own design, not their design. But the only way we do that is when we step away from this manipulation, when we step away from all the lies and the prejudices and biases that have been put on us. There's no one here greater than anybody else. There's no one here more valid than anybody else. That's truth. That's a fact. And when we can come to that point, maybe we can find a way through this that works for us, for all of us. You know, just saying.
That's why I love People for People Radio, man. That's why I love all these people that show up at ShazizRadio.com and people that's on the Knights of the Round Table. It's like we get it, and it's a family. And so I'm thinking we're doing a good thing, and we should keep it up. So what you got there, Barry?
Well, there's a million different things we could say right now, but really we see the world in a lot of turmoil right now, and seems to be getting worse by the day. So for me, I tell people you can't believe anything you hear, that you have to research everything. You have to make yourself aware of what's going on and stand against it, because we're in a very critical time right now that we're going to either lose our freedoms or we're going to stand and gain them. The divisions in our society, the deprogrammed society, is a monumental task, guys, because we've been programmed, not we, but society in general has been programmed right from the time they were born. And to deprogram them now at this particular time is going to be a monumental task. But they've got us to where they want us right now. They've got us fighting amongst ourselves so we don't recognize the true enemy. The enemy is within the gates, and we got to call him out for what he is. My thoughts.
Agreed. I couldn't disagree with nothing you said. Look, Barbara, you got anything last that you want to throw in there?
No, I just want to thank everybody for participating. It's so great to see everybody show up, and I love lots of your input and all your ideas and things, and it's just good to be here, and I just have great hope. I'm not in fear. I haven't been in fear. I believe in something far greater. Like I said, it's not for me to judge others. It's not for me to say it's the end. It's not for me to push doom and gloom. I'm just speaking the reality of things, the truth of things, and then I think we all have to just take responsibility for how we want to live and participate in this lifetime. That's
what. Well, folks, another fascinating conversation that just took a life of its own, and this is, this doggone psychological warfare, it's a real thing. They're really doing this to us, and in some incidents, we're doing it to each other, and we need to find a way to find some common ground. And the best way, and the only way that I know, because of the way my heart and my spirit works, is that you got to reach way down inside, and you got to want yourself first of all. You got to be strong for yourself in order to be strong for others. You reach way down inside, and you grab a hold of that thing called love, and you lift it up, and you shine your light as bright as you possibly can. And when other people see how your life is going, they're more apt to follow in your direction. But by getting out there and yelling at each other and harming each other and violence and all the craziness that you see in worst place on college campuses, in college towns, where the youth of today is out there basically fighting each other in the streets. You go back and look at the first Civil War, you go watch the series Jericho, and you think about, do you really want to do that? Do you really want to go down that road? Because once we're down there, you know, it's like what I said about that bullet. The moment that bullet comes out of that barrel of that gun, there's no pulling it back. There's a saying that if you live by the sword, you shall surely die by the sword. And to me, dying by a sword don't sound very pleasant. So I don't think I want to do that, as well as I don't want to go out there and shoot anybody. I don't want to see our children out there shooting each other. I don't want to see our nations fighting amongst each other. You know, there's talks of wars and rumors of wars, plagues and famines and pestilence. And I still honestly believe, I'm just probably that crazy one in the crowd that still honestly believes that we still have a chance. We still have hope. Because Jesus said a few things to me, and whether you like him or not, whether he was real or not, whether it's just a fairy tale, but the words resonated deep in my spirit. He said that if you had the faith of a mountain, you could speak to that mountain and you could tell it to move and it would surely move. And I believe that with all that I am. It might move in slowly because you're just a little tiny speck in the whole deal. But honestly, I think that each one of these mustard seeds, each one of these positive pebbles that we're throwing in the pond are rippling out there, and they're making a difference, just a little bit at a time. So reach down deep inside and pull out the best of you.
That's what we're doing. Thanks to you, we're doing that right here with you.
Peace and love.
Can I
go ahead, Barry.
Just a quick plug, guys. I have an award-winning journalist joining me this afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific time. He's an educator and journalist. We're going to talk about the United Nations. The man absolutely captivated my attention when he spoke the first time I talked to him. So it should be a very interesting show, and I hope you guys have time to tune in. That's on People's Internet Radio at 1 p.m. this afternoon Pacific time.
Sounds great.
He's great.
We had Muddy Mudman was going to join us, but he's a little late.
Uh-oh. Well, tell him...
Next week, I hope.
Tell him to get his coffee early next week and be here.
And tomorrow, everybody, tune in. Turtle and Crow Show live.
Yay! I love the Turtle and Crow Show. If I can find the time, maybe I'll sneak up in there and hide in the background.
be around tomorrow. We'll pull you in.
All right, everybody. Peace and love. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Once again, if this anything we said here today helps you and resonates in your heart and you think it's worthy to share with your brothers and sisters around the world, everyone out there, you know, somebody said in there, everybody's life is pretty tough right now. And I think everybody needs a little bit of love. Everybody needs a little bit of hope and peace in their heart. So if anything here helps that process, send it on to him for us, would you? Thanks a lot.
Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay? What
is the dream. The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
Woman! Man, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How do you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
But if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away!
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
spread light to the round table. We dance when we're able. We'll routine to call the scenes to bookwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
To seize the turbo and the knights of the round table.